Okay, if I could have everyone please take a seat and we'll come to order. Please just continue your conversations and we will come to order, please. Okay, AGP, I think I need more volume. Hello, everyone. Could you please take a seat? And we will bring to order the September 24th, 2007 session of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present. We will begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. All right, for the pledge this evening, we have our volunteer of the month, Chuck Ogle, and his daughter, Abigail, and his son, Hank. And they're going to lead the pledge for us.
Right hand over heart, ready to salute.
Thank you. Now, Chuck, you may want to stay up there. Andrea, yeah.
Good evening. As the council knows and as the public knows, the Recreation and Parks Department depends on a number of volunteers each year to do our programs, mostly our youth sports programs. During the month of September alone, we had over 978 hours of volunteer time to run our youth soccer program. For the past several months, as you know, we've recognized one of our volunteers, and this month we are recognizing Chuck Ogle as Volunteer of the Month for October. Just to tell you a little bit about what Chuck has done in the last several years, he's coached a T-ball and youth coach pitch program, for at least the last 2 years. The program is held in the spring and involves at least two practices and one game each week. He also coached a team in the youth soccer league for over 5 years, and last year he actually coached two teams at one time. That program is a fall program that involves two practices each week after school, Saturday games, and basically runs from late August through mid-November. Chuck has also coached a team during our inaugural year of futsal, which is an indoor soccer program, and that's held in the winter from the January through March. As a volunteer coach, Chuck is a dream come true in the Recreation and Parks Department. He emphasizes sportsmanship, teamwork, and leadership. He's always been a very positive role model for the children on the practice field as well as the game, whether they're winning or losing the game, which is a great attribute to have. Chuck has also taken a further step in volunteering by being a mentor. He's mentored adult coaches as well as currently he's mentoring a high school age soccer coach. He's given tons of time to the city of Morro Bay. He's also a supporter of staff, and we appreciate him as Volunteer of the Year for October. And we have a certificate for him this evening, and I'll just read it very quickly. And it says, the City of Morro Bay Certificate of Appreciation to Chuck Ogle for your outstanding contribution of volunteer hours supporting the City of Morro Bay's Recreation and Parks Department youth sports programs. Without your unselfish donation of time and energy, these worthwhile...
And we had a good time, surprisingly good time. So thank you to Coach Tina for the inspiration. And, I've always appreciated the constant support of the Recreation Department and the time and effort and encouragement my wife Kathleen has given to our children's recreational sports activities. So thanks again for the award. It's nice.
Thank you, Chuck. Okay, I'm going to go to our police report because Officer Millard is on duty and he's going to be part of that and he needs to be free to go. So we'll get to council comments right after that. John, go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Mayor and Council. I have some good news. We finally, after months and months and months, got our new badges in. They haven't been distributed yet because we just got them and we're in inventory them, but I wanted to show them off tonight. If you recall, the badges were purchased from donations from the community spearheaded by John Weiss and the Chamber of Commerce. And so that's what makes these very unique. So you can see the difference between the old, what we call security guard style, and the new full oval style, which most law enforcement agencies have gone to. And we mimicked that big round city seal right behind you. That's what we took a picture of and sent to the badge company. So that's what our new badges look like.
Beautiful.
A lot of new stuff is happening with Neighborhood Watch. Susan Heineman, I saw her here. She has taken a lead role in revitalizing the program, getting a new website and coordinating a marketing campaign. And it's just they formed a committee. I know Councilman Pierce is on it. And they've got all kinds of plans to get the word out and get people to join Neighborhood Watch at all different levels. So, Susan, thank you for all your efforts. Our new Friends of the Police Department group is progressing with the formation of a board of directors and getting their nonprofit 501c3 status. And the interest in the size of the group is growing as we speak. The group is very interested in looking at both short-term and long-term funding solutions to help the police department, and also trying to come up with ways to help with our retention and recruitment efforts also. And speaking of that, we're beginning our recruitment efforts for the vacant officer position that was created by Officer Godfrey's recent departure, and also a likely future vacancy. In addition, we're recruiting for our part-time evidence and property clerk also. The state legislature and the governor approved our COPS grant again this year, which we'll be talking about shortly. As it was last year, it was touch and go there in jeopardy, but they put it in the state budget for this year, so that's good news. And I'd like to congratulate the Chamber of Commerce for an absolute wonderful avocado and margarita festival. From our perspective, it went very, very, very well. I'm sure you'll hear more about that tonight. And Sergeant Brian Millard is here. We'd like to talk about our TIPACOP program, and I'd like if he could come up and explain that all to you.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you also, Honorable Mayor and Council, for allowing me an opportunity to speak briefly tonight. I promise to be brief. And I wanted to bring your attention to an event that Morro Bay Police Department is helping to host in cooperation with the San Luis Obispo County Chapter of Special Olympics. On Friday, October 12th of this year, at the Community Center, we're hosting what is known as a TIPACOP dinner. That's at 5:30 p.m. and 7 o'clock p.m. It's a benefit dinner that helps raise funds for the San Luis Obispo County Chapter of Special Olympics. $20 per person, that's an adult price, that buys you a barbecue dinner, tri-tip sides, and a drink, and then $5 for children. And several agencies throughout the county and, in fact, throughout the state help to host these dinners. And what it is basically police officers volunteer their time and other personnel from police departments to help serve dinners to those people who buy tickets. You get to TIPACOP to get your refill of coffee, and they're at your service. I'm also proud to announce that both our chief and our commander and several of our staff are also going to be on hand that night to do so. And the chief actually has tickets available tonight. So if you'd like to be served dinner by the chief or our commander or several of us, including myself, please see him. He's got tickets to sell as well as the rest of us. If for those who don't buy tickets tonight but are interested, 772-6284, police administration number, that will be available for event information and ticket information. And since I'm not the expert on Special Olympics matters, I'd also like to turn it over for just a brief moment to Stephanie Hennessy, who actually works for our local Special Olympics chapter.
Great, thank you. And the badge looks good.
For those of you who are not aware of what our program is, we're a sports training and competition program for children and adults with intellectual disabilities, and our program is free of cost to all athletes and their families. So it's events like these that we really depend on.
So it was delightful, and the Chablis actually won the best guacamole entry. Another thing that happened this last week was our CMANC meetings. This is the California Marine Navigation Group. Rick Algert is the president of that this year, and he and Sue and Eric from the Harbor Department, I want to give them just a real public thank you for putting together an incredible event. Everybody that was involved, and these are people from all over the state, the Army Corps of Engineers, all kinds of people were here. They loved every minute of it. It was very well organized, got a lot of work done, but also had a wonderful harbor cruise, and it was just a really good event, and I know you all worked very hard on it. I appreciate that very much. Another thing that I want to read is an email that I got this morning, and lots of times when I get emails from just, you know, the public, not residents, but other people, it's like complaining about something. This one I have to share. Dear Mayor Peters, on a last-minute trip, we decided to stay in Morro Bay. What a wonderful town. We enjoyed our stay immensely. From our lunch at Gourmet Grub to the farmer's market on Saturday, we rented bikes for a tour around town and even spoiled ourselves at Carousel Taffy. Judy at the Erin Hill Vineyards shop was so friendly. We stumbled upon the giant chessboard and kicked back to watch a game. Our stay was short, but we enjoyed every minute. Thank you for such a great time. You have very hospitable locals and wonderful places to eat. Your town reminded us why we love living in California. I can't wait to tell everyone about the hidden treasure of Morro Bay. So I just was thrilled to get that one, and I sent it out to our Chamber of Commerce and the people mentioned, and that's what we're proud of, and I'm so glad that people are letting us know that we're doing it. Okay, other council announcements. Betty?
Yes, I also was appreciative of the CMAC conference that the Harbor helped sponsor this year here at the state meeting, and found it very educational for the day that I attended. Also attended the LAFCO meeting on Thursday, where they agreed to continue our item until October, but were obviously willing to go ahead as we had asked to put the two Chevron Dog Beach parcels into our sphere of influence, and that probably will be just a ready-to-go type thing, along with the Bay sphere of influence for next month. And then lastly, I would like to acknowledge the League of Women Voters, who are sending a representative to attend our meetings, as they are to all councils in the county, to see how we're doing, to check our adherence to rules and what issues we're interested in, and see at what point they would want to discuss those on their own. So I don't know if she's here, but thank you to Ethel Sosna for volunteering to do that.
Bill?
I just wanted to say a few more words about the Neighborhood Watches campaign that's still in its infancy. There is a small committee of people, but it's large enough that I will leave a name out if I mention their names. But the spark plug for that is Susan Heineman, and Susan is here hiding in a hat. And I don't know, do we have a copy of the poster? Did Hank bring that? Is Hank even here? No, that's another. Well, okay, you're going to have to use your imaginations. If you drive around town, look at neighborhood watch signs, you see the silhouetted figure of an evil-looking person. You know, and that person actually has a name. That person is Boris the Burglar. Well, we've tried to clean Boris's act up a little bit, and we just call him Boris the Bad Guy. There he is on the overhead, and you've seen that with the circle through there. Well, Boris is spearheading our campaign. We are going out to enlist people in the various age groups and various just all over town, and we're going to have a website that they can go to and they can get information. We're going to have they can give us an email address, and we will send them regular information on everything from scams to predators. And so the website is just up, thanks to a lot of work from Susan and Linda Steggy, but it's not up enough yet for me to give the name out to, or the address out to you. So be watching. You're going to see posters in the various stores and markets. You're going to see kids taking flyers home to their parents, and you're going to get something in the mail with your water bill. But be on the lookout for Boris the Bad Guy. We're going to keep him out of Morro Bay.
Rick?
Yeah, a couple of things. Rick Algert, great job on CMAC. I really got my biggest thrill. I was an old enlisted man, so I got to have lunch with a general there that day. That was pretty cool. Also, regarding the medication going down the sewer, I called Rite Aid, got a hold of Rite Aid corporate office, and asked them if they could have a program there at Rite Aid where people could turn in the meds rather than flush it, because it's very hard to get out of the water. So
that's all at 7 p.m.
Okay. All right, closed session report.
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, council met in closed session on two different items. Real property transactions, the property discussed was 833 Embarcadero, and they also met in closed session on personnel issues, the annual evaluation of the city attorney and city manager. As to both of these items, no action was taken on the Brown Act that requires reporting.
All right, this is the public comment period. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes and on items that are not on our public hearing agenda tonight.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff. My name is Keith Taylor, resident of North Morro Bay, friend of the Morro Bay Fire Department. Well, as everybody knows, on Saturday we had this magnificent event, the Avocado Festival in Margarita. Well, luckily our fire department was there and they had a medical aid and were able to take care of the person. They had a simultaneous call and they handled it without a hitch. But I'm really here to say thank you to the staff. I just was amazed. Bob Hendricks worked his butt off. Andrea and Jamie Boucher, Tim Olivius, Bruce Ambo, it just seemed everyone in this town turned out. You know, and they don't have to be here working. They could be out staying home. Chief DeRohan, he was doing profiling. We had Mike Pond serving beer. And we had this other guy, Rob Schultz, that came. He must have got lost. He was on his way to Carnival, and evidently he didn't know where it was, so he came to this. He had beads on. He was giving all the people beads. Everybody just thought it was a wonderful time. The best part of this, the beermeister, Rob Schultz, we ran out of beer, and we needed to have it tapped, so he went in, along with the city administration it took to do the first one until they got it, and then it was okay. And I know that Rick and Melody and everyone just worked so hard. It was just a great event. I went there and thought, well, I wonder how this is going to be. The line where they buy tickets for the margaritas and the beer, that never thinned out. And I don't know how much we made or any of that, but it was just a wonderful event. I just want to thank all the staff for their hard work on this. It was great.
Thank you.
Hello, Neil Farrell from the Art Cans Committee. I've got some renderings for the next cans that are supposed to be done October 13th and 14th, that weekend anyway. You want to put them up here?
Sure.
Snowy Clovers from a local gal, Dana Hickson, born and raised in Morro Bay. This one here is from Barbara Lair, kind of an abstract. These are supposed to be, I'm told that these are going to be mirrors for the shine. This is one from Eric Olson. These are avocets in the estuary. There's one from Brenda Myers. This is so very good, but it's very colorful, as you can see. This one's from Goofy Gary Ryan, and it's already up, already on the can across the street from the kite shop down there. And this one is, can't read the name. It's done in pencil, but it'll be painted on, so it should look better. And then this is Mr. Humphrey, who did one for us last time. This will be in the city park. We've got 10 artists and 8 sponsors. So if anybody wants to sponsor one of these, it's a great way to memorialize someone who's passed away. It's cheaper than a city bench. And Anyway, call Ann Reisner. Her number's in the book. I think it's 772-8117. Is that right? Okay. And like I said, we're also going to do one at the Harbor Festival. The guy, Ruben Avila, who did the tile mural over at Jug Liquor, is going to be on display at the Harbor Festival doing one of these. So that should be pretty cool. And that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you.
Looking group that is. Okay, Gary Johnson, a resident of Morro Bay. Beautiful. Is that we do secondhand rows. We also do, like we just mentioned about art trash cans. And we also do the downtown planters in downtown Morro Bay. And so we did have a good time. So we turned in our old ones, and the old ones are worn out. Now, everybody knows Chuck Meisner. He's rather a poet. I like to say that very ordinary folks in Morro Bay do not like to see trash gone astray. So, in spite of age and arthritis, they gather up all the trash and keep this town ready to play. And the second version is, there are special people in Morro who, for whom the sight of loose trash goes sorrow. So in spite of age and arthritis, they gather up the trash to keep the town clean for the morrow. Isn't that really neat from Chuck? Yeah. And so it looks like I got a few more minutes. I'd like to, Ann's phone number, if you want to join up or donate some money to us so we can keep our new grabbers, buy new ones and trash bags, because we support every event. Any event in Morro Bay, we're out there the next day picking up trash. And her phone number is, 772-8117. And we're a part of the Avocado Margarita Festival. And several of us were kind of incognito security people in case somebody got out of hand. And I couldn't believe the kind of people we had there. They're fantastic. People with their kids, family, dogs, cats, everybody was there. And, Rob, they did a super job. So, anyway, that's about all I got to say. Oh, okay, my
time's up.
Perfect
timing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Could I give these to someone?
Honorable Mayor, Council, staff, and friends, Joey Ricano with the Ocean Outfall Group. I guess you know that today the United Nations is being addressed, of the world is being addressed by Governor Schwarzenegger, and it appears that he's taking the lead in the world on our environment, our environmental crisis. And one of the things that Arnold has done with us is the MLPA initiative process, which gave us our new state marine reserve in Morro Bay East Estuary. Now, the second slide here shows the results, and that was that the Fish and Game Commission created that MLPA in our estuary and put limits on fishing. And our state marine reserve is located on these coordinates, and what's important is that take of all living marine resources is prohibited. Next. Now, you'll see that the language in the master plan on page 52 says that that take itself is not limited to fishing activities. For example, coastal power plants, they impinge and entrain fish and invertebrates and larvae in the process of drawing ocean water. Now, here's a little curveball for you. It's called selective enforcement. And according to the NYU School of Law in New York, that selective enforcement occurs when a law that seems fair and impartial is enforced by public authorities in a discriminating manner. This can be a criminal enforcement authority or a regulatory enforcement authority. Selective enforcement is a specific kind of partial enforcement. Its selectivity makes it illegitimate. Well, what does that mean to us? Well, as you know, four or five days ago, the Marine Reserves went into effect. And according to our Tribune and many other papers, the world is watching. So it has also conspicuously been silent at the power plant. And don't they know that they no longer can operate legally? And the fact of the matter is that the next time that power plant sucks in our ocean water for cooling, they will be violating the entire MLPA process, which I don't think that they dare do. And finally, I would conclude by saying this. You don't want to be guilty of selective enforcement, because the minute that that power plant operates, you'll have to allow the fishermen to go back out to fish. So think about that one. I do think that the days of the power plant destroying our estuary are over, and I expect leadership from this council. And I thank you for this opportunity to address you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Councilman.
If you could put the microphone down a little. Put the microphone down a little so we can...
Facilities would be very good for Morro Bay, but not at this location. I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Debbie Collins, and I'm just in here in support of Vi and the League family. Recently, my husband just had some dealings with Mr. Redican and his partners in San Luis Obispo. They were not able to fulfill their $3 million contract that, or a piece of real estate that was for sale for $3 million. So basically what I'm saying is buyer beware.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Susan Heineman, resident of Morro Bay, but tonight I am not Susan Heineman. Tonight I am Natasha. As Natasha, I am a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. I have come this evening to tell you about two events held on the same day, next Saturday, the 29th of September, at the same time at Limos Pet and Feed Store from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The address for Limos is 1320 Main Street. The first event is Paw Prints, being put on by Morro Bay Pups, a nonprofit organization. The goal is to raise money for the fenced-in dog park at Del Mar, which is in North Morro Bay. Dog friends, this is your chance for immortality. Put your fingerprints or your paw prints in cement and not get scolded. Your prints will be placed to make up in the cement to make a plaque, permanent, weatherproof, and 8 inches in size. The donation for the plaque is $25. The plaque can either be given to Morro Bay Pups to be hung in the dog park fence posts or taken home to be placed in your garden. This is how the plaque looks on the dog park fence. Pretty cool, huh? This is Dudley, and you can see he has a pretty big paw up there. The second event is Adopt a Pet. Woods Animal Shelter will be present. Here are some of my friends who would really, really like to come home with you. First of all, this is Taz, a 6-year-old terrier mix. His claim to fame is that he stands on two legs and dances for treats. Next is Wally, a 3-year-old pit lab mix. He is a great dog with extensive obedience training. Then there's Sandy, a 10-year-old husky mix. Gentle, loving, looking for a good family, a definite staff favorite. Then there's Casey, a 7-year-old boxer, high energy, looking for someone who does long walks on the beach and hikes. Want to get in shape? This is the dog for you. And finally, there's Julie, a 4-year-old Chihuahua cross. The staff calls her a lot of dog in a small package. She's special in that she has participated as a pet visitation dog to local retirement facilities. Well, that's it for now. So come on down and see us on this coming Saturday, the 29th, from 10 to 4 at Limos Pet and Feed Store. There will be homemade cookies, pies, drinks, dogs, beautiful people, great dogs, lots of fun. So see you there. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, Natasha.
I don't know how to follow that. I'm here as a business owner tonight. My name is Joan Solu, and I'd like to express my concern over the proposed increase in development impact fees that are being considered by you tonight.
That is a public hearing. Do you want to wait until then? That's a public hearing item.
Yeah. I will wait.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, if I could clarify for the audience that development impact fees are a public hearing item, but the other item about building is the urgency ordinance about the 2,500 square foot homes. That's C1. That's not public hearing, and you should talk about that now, not then.
Yeah, Ray McElligott, I want to talk about C1, the interim emergency ordinance modifying the development of parcels in the R1 district that exceeds 2,500 square feet. I'm in whole support of this, I think.
My name is Bob Tept, Morro Bay resident. As you all know, the concept of preserving Morro Bay's small-town fishing village character is fundamental to our general plan, and the concept that new development should be compatible with and enhance that character. As you also know, we have not yet enacted any sort of instruments within our zoning ordinance or other municipal ordinances that would allow that to be done administratively. We don't have numbers for people to look at that will accomplish that. And so the only way to do it is by judgment. Somebody has to look at the projects and say, this fits, this doesn't fit. And I would submit to you that although a process is going on that hopefully will result in some more concrete guidelines and more administratively applicable guidelines, right now, when judgment is required, the people who should offer that judgment is the Planning Commission and, in backup, the City Council. And so I would recommend that you support item C1. I think it's a good middle-of-the-road measure. It doesn't stop anybody from building anything. It simply says, for the time being, there's certain things that may have an impact that's negative and need to be looked at. So I think it's moderate, I think it's reasonable, and I would recommend your approval. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck Cribbs, I'm a resident of Los Osos. I stand before you in support of Ms. League's proposal. Outrigger. And I have a prepared statement I'll just read. You may ask why I'm addressing this board on its plan to redevelop that part of the Barkdale Bay, which includes the possible elimination of that Outrigger restaurant. I answer that question from a tourist point of view. Being from Los Osos, I bring money to Morro Bay. And my wife and I have gone out to dinner Morro Bay at least once a week for many years. I do understand the need to continually improve your Embarcadero establishments to stay competitive with your Central Coast neighbors. The possibility that the Outrigger restaurant may be limited is disturbing to us. We have dined at most of the Morro Bay restaurants multiple times. Years ago, we settled on Rose's Landing as our main destination. Our nights out were varied at different locations, but found ourselves at Rose's about every other time. Everyone looked forward to the reopening of the remodeled Rose's restaurant. We started eating there immediately upon the reopening. Unfortunately, we have been very disappointed. The ambiance is gone. As important to us was service, that the service has become fair at best, and the food has become standard to unimaginative. Not good, not bad, just not good. Because of our disappointment with Rosa's, we actually tried the outrigger for the first time. We hadn't been there. There's no comparison. They earned our business. Their service is top rate, and the consistency of their food has kept us coming back. In essence, they replaced Rosa's as our most visited destination. It is my understanding that the city has records on the volume of business that each establishment does. I would find it difficult to believe that Rosa's is outdoing the outrigger in percentage gains year over year. I also understand that the developer who is responsible for Rosa's Landing is the possible new owner of the building in which the outrigger is doing business. I also understand that that if he is awarded this contract, that he would definitely remove the outrigger. This, in my opinion, as a loyal tourist, would be a major mistake. Definitely develop, but please ensure that the outrigger and current operators continue to exist in their current location. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the flag. That's very effective.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Ann Reeves. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I came in support of C1. I do think that stepping back and looking at the direction that we're taking is probably a sensible thing to do. You know, Morro Bay, we've always described it as a small fishing village, and while sadly it's not so much fishing, it's still a small seaside village, and it's what lures us here to live, and it's what lures the tourists in. We're not Paso, we're not Pismo, we're not Newport Beach or Laguna. Each of those communities have their own flavor, and they have, to a great degree, branded themselves the way they are. But what works there won't necessarily work here. I think we have our own flavor, and it deserves the caring.
I believe that tourism is the greatest fund or source of funds for the city of Morro Bay. Las Vegas is not the only place that can have an armed robbery intrusion into a motel room. We do not want that reputation. It happened to us at the Best Western, El Rancho, I think in July. There were four miscreants involved, three of which our diligent police department has been able to track down and arrest. We need our police department. I understand that we have lost Officer Mark Godfrey to Cal Poly. Henry Cantu is in background check with Santa Maria. It costs us $100,000 minimum to replace an officer. We're the lowest paid department in the city, in the county. I know we're short of money, but we need. I don't want to be in a position where I've got to shoot the guy that comes through my door. I want the police department to do it for me. In any event, well, I don't think we want to have to resort to self-help at any time. Our department does an incredible job. We don't have the staffing that we had back in 64. And I take my hat off to the department, and I take my hat off to the fire department, too. I understand they got some bad mouthing about burning down the old fire station. They're not aware that we did everything we could to figure out how to move that building and make affordable housing out of it. We had bids from Santa Maria House Mover. Everybody was involved, the city attorney, the building department, everybody. It didn't pencil out. It couldn't be done. We'd have to take out a Highway 1. In any event, it didn't pay to cut the thing up in pieces and move it. The public isn't aware of that, but the police department and the fire department are doing things for our city that it's behind the scenes that we never see. And I want to say thank you. And I want to suggest that anybody that is interested in getting into the support of the Friends of the Police Department, contact is Claire, right? Claire Grantham, because she's the chairwoman. Anyway, thank you very kindly.
Thank you, Lanny. Okay. One last speaker? Okay.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. I'm here on items D1 and C1. D1, the outrigger. It's clear that you're planning to push Vi League out of her lease. What motivates you to take this action is not completely clear, but I'm sure you'll be telling us what a wonderful thing a conference center will be in that location. But what if you start down this road, give the lease to the other applicants, and then no conference center gets built? What are you going to say then to Vi League and Patrick and all the other employees down there who will be losing their livelihood over what you do here? Beware of bait and switch. By that I mean, when you're being offered something that's pie in the sky with many contingencies in the future, if it doesn't come to pass, it may blind you, you know, to what you're really doing. And I caution you, you know, that we have members of the community here that have been contributing to our community for a long time and would like to continue doing that. I urge you to let Vi League keep her lease. Item C1, this so-called interim urgency ordinance, is truly outrageous, okay? I looked at state law on this thing, and what it says is you can do this prior to adopting a zoning ordinance. Well, we have a zoning ordinance right now. We've had one for over 20 years. And then it goes on to say that the legislative body shall not adopt or extend any interim ordinance pursuant to this section unless the ordinance contains legislative findings that there is a current and immediate threat to public health, safety, welfare, and that the approval of permits or any other applicable entitlement which is required in order to comply with the zoning ordinance would result in that threat to public health, safety, and welfare. There is no emergency here, folks. This is an abuse of the process. I know you probably put a lot of pressure on your city staff to come up with this thing, and you ordered them to do it, but this is an abuse of the process. There is a way to change ordinances. You're all well aware of it. It's what you live with every day. What you're doing now is abusing the process.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Madam Mayor, members of the City Council, my name is Dan Riddell. I'm a lot owner in Morro Bay, and I'm here about item C1. I mean, is this political code for you're getting ready to impose a building moratorium on us? Is that what this is about? No? Well, and are you talking about 2,500 square foot on a 40 by 60 lot in North Morro Bay? Or is it on every lot in Morro Bay, whether it's a small lot or an acre? Guess you can't say. But I'd just like to stand here and say that John was exactly right. We already have zoning or
parking. And parking is a big issue on the waterfront. It's not going to work. And like the other gentleman said, a pie in the sky in the future just isn't going to cut it. We need to stick with what we already have. Vi has done a great job. She's planning on doing more. I'm for her proposal. I thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Please. The waving is great. It's been really helpful. Okay. We'll bring it back to council. Okay. We got one more person. This is it, right? Okay. All right. Anybody else who wants to speak, could you please get in line, because we only have 7 more minutes, and I want to make sure you all get a chance if you're going to... Okay, so that's it. Just 2 more people. Steve, are you in line to speak? Are you? Okay, so 2 more people. Okay, thank you. 3 more. Okay, that's it. That's the last person, okay? Thank you. Go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Meredith Bell, and I live in Morro Bay. This whole idea of that we're even at this point now with Vi League's lease is very upsetting to me. I don't understand how you can set a precedent starting with her lease when there's really no reason for it. You talk about taking all of the parking off the streets in all of Morro Bay, but yet now you're talking about giving her lease for a convention center to somebody else and adding 200 more parking spaces. We don't have enough parking as it is. It doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense. The restaurant there's fabulous. It's busy. The two next door aren't even busy. You're going to put another restaurant of theirs right next door again? It doesn't make sense. It seems like discrimination to me. I don't... You know, we voted to put you in office so that you could speak for us. You're not speaking for us. You're speaking for yourselves, not us. And if you let this project go through, I doubt any of you will be reelected. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, no applause. Waving is good. Applause is bad.
Good evening. My name is Gene Dowdy. I'm an architect, 201 Main Street. I'm here to talk about ViLeague's proposal. I reviewed the request for redevelopment of that lease site. There was nothing about the adjacent lease site. Vi was restricted in only proposing on her lease site. I think that all she's asking for is a level playing field. I think that you should extend her lease to 2011 if you want to develop both lease sites at the same time. And concerning the convention center proposal, I do not know whether the selection committee has ever designed or reviewed convention facilities, but I have. The proposed convention facility does not meet the support system that it is going to require. It is not a big enough lease site. The city has a lease site, already property that they already bought for a convention center. And then comparing the convention center area, one of the requirements was public participation in that lease site. By creating a convention center, you are eliminating public participation in that lease site. I'd ask you give her a level playing field. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Kirk Najarian. I'm a property owner here in Morro Bay. I wanted to address my opposition to C1. I just feel that if any home or property here meets the setbacks and lot coverage guidelines, which are already put in place, I don't see what right the Planning Commission has to dictate to a private citizen on how they should design their home. This is Morro Bay. It's not a gated community that needs an architectural review board or has design guidelines. If a person is going to build a home or something here in Morro Bay that's completely out of character or out of line with the neighborhood, you'll have enough neighbors bringing it to the commission's attention, and that's the way it should be. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Rob, could you explain a couple of things? First of all, on the league lease, could you explain what it is that we'd be approving tonight, please?
Yes, in front of council tonight is we went through first a request for proposals, and those were accepted, and the council will be deciding which request for proposal.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. We're, as I mentioned earlier, we're fortunate again this year to be the recipient of the $100,000 grant as part of the State COPS grant, which is Citizens Option for Public Safety. These funds aren't guaranteed from year to year and are subject to legislator and governor approval each year, and we were fortunate that they approved it. The legislation requires that the police chief prepare a report to the council on how the funds are proposed to be spent, and a public hearing is required, and that's what's before you tonight. The police staff has met and prioritized our needs for this grant spending. The proposed spending this year is mostly on equipment, with no funds budgeted for newer replacement equipment and the equipment depreciation plan not being funded again this year. We're relying on this grant for equipment purchases, replacements, and upgrades. The major proposed purchase is for in-car videos. This has been a priority with us for some time. We're one of the only agencies in this county that currently do not have such systems. These systems allow the capture of both audio and video from the patrol vehicle and provide crucial evidence in court and, of course, during any civil litigation. The cost of a complete system is about $50,000. The remaining funds are proposed to be spent on the following: some computer room upgrades to include a dedicated 30-amp circuit to serve our entire computer system, replacing an old server, upgrading our battery backup systems for the servers, and that's about a estimated $10,000. Migration from Novell to Windows operating system. We're one of the few agencies that still operate in a Novell environment, while most operate in a Windows-based system. Additionally, we share the same computer-aided dispatch and records management system with the other agencies in the county, and they're all on a Windows-based system. So our CAD RMS vendor has informed us that after next year, they're not going to be able to support us in the Novell environment because of a lot of problems associated with that. So we need to migrate over to a Windows operating system, and for all that to take place, it's around $10,000. The next item is a automatic security gate and fencing in our annex parking lot. Last year, we were able to put some additional fencing along the back wall, and we split that with the property owners from the trailer court back there. And we'd like to fence off the remaining of the lot and put a an electronic gate there. What that'll do is it'll provide, number one, our employees with some secured parking, and it'll also expand that lot to where we can do some more things with it, to include one of the other items that we're proposing is to replace an old cargo container that stores a lot of our bulk property and evidence that we've been patching the roof for years, and it's just not patchable anymore. And we need to get a bigger one with some roll-up doors, and by doing that, it'll allow us to put a bigger one in there. And also, as I mentioned, we need to replace that cargo container. That fence we're estimating with the electronic gate is about $15,000. The replacement of a larger cargo container with the roll-up doors we're estimating at about $10,000. And that leaves us about $5,000 for miscellaneous equipment. This allows us to replace and upgrade small equipment such as radio batteries, computers, computer battery backups, printers, radios, firearms equipment, etc. We budgeted this miscellaneous equipment each year in the COPS grants, and it's allowed us to replace some of the smaller equipment. So we recommend you hold the public hearing, adopt the police department spending plan, and attached resolution. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Okay, I asked you a question today, and if you could just explain that. It looked to me, with this grant going into sunset, that it would be a constant, that the sunset clause was removed, so it would be a constant grant. Could you explain that a little?
I probably should have taken that. That's old wording from the previous grants, and that happened a few years ago. I probably should have taken that out because I could see where it's misleading. The grant is not guaranteed from year to year. It has to be approved by the legislature. These last couple years, it's been in jeopardy, and the Cal Chiefs and sheriffs have done a lot of lobbying for it, and it got thrown in at the last minute. So it's not guaranteed from year to year.
Which is why it can't be used for personnel. That's where I was getting.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions? Betty?
Yes, that very topic of personnel, not that it can't be used for personnel, but
I've shared with you, I won't go into that again, but it makes it difficult when the COPS grant gets approved and the money comes in October, and then it generally takes 2 to 3 months of recruiting, and then to try to recruit somebody and tell them you've only got a guaranteed job for the next 6 months is virtually impossible. And that's, in a small agency like ours, that's where it becomes very difficult to do that. And that's why we haven't had luck using it for personnel. The larger agencies that you're mentioning also have large equipment budgets where they're able to replace all their equipment, where we're not because that was taken out of our budget. So I hope that explains a little bit of the difference between us as a small agency and our recruiting issues, you know, compared to some of those that you were referring to.
Okay. Other questions? Rick?
Well, it's about time we get the videos put in the car. It's really great evidence to have when you have a they said, he said kind of situation, and you look at it as evidence. And I understand it's going to be 5 cars outfitted with that for $50,000, all marked cars. Also, I understand that these aren't really things that you picked. It's the result of a department-wide meeting that you held, and it was the employees suggestions that you've listed here, and a big one was the secure parking, because there has been a history of vandalism to some of the employees' cars. And I think we're probably the only law enforcement entity in the county that doesn't have secure parking. I think you can speak to that.
As far as my knowledge, that's correct.
And I've been in your storage container, and it's been leaking for years. I certainly support you using this money for these items, and I understand why they can't be used for staff and personnel.
Madam Mayor, may I comment? I have a concern about one of these items, and I wanted to express it to council and suggest a modification to the list that won't change the entire program, and that is the suggestion to migrate from the Novell system to Windows. That is estimated in here at $10,000, but I think if we begin that process, we can multiply that by six, because the police department obviously isn't the only set of servers we have. There are servers in the harbor department, the recreation department, the city hall, public services, and so on. And I would like to do a lot more planning about that before we commit to that course of action. And as a result of that, I would prefer if the council would take the $10,000 that is allocated to number three and allocate it to number six, so that we can have further discussions about the practicality of that and the timing.
Okay, thank you.
Question,
Bill?
A question for Mr. Hendricks. Are the servers interdependent?
They require a certain level of knowledge and skill to maintain, and there are different systems with different protocols, and we're asking an awful lot of a single staff person if we're going to start changing those systems. So at the very least, what we're contemplating is external system maintenance, which we don't now do, at additional cost.
I would think switching to a Windows environment from Novell would be a lot easier on your IT person, considering at least it's not something still being used with Civil War technology.
Some may think that. On the other hand, using a system that is not common in the Internet has resolved a lot of our problems with spamming and that sort of thing, because our systems simply aren't the normal that you would encounter if you're trying to spam agencies. So I'd leave it at that, and ultimately we may go there, but I would certainly prefer to have a lot more planning and exploration of this issue before we just simply jump the fence, so to speak.
Okay, other questions, Melody?
Just a comment that I can't believe we're not Windows operating systems in this town.
I think we need to speak a little louder, and I don't know if AGP can turn our volume up. People are having a tough time hearing.
I was shocked, actually, that we have to move to Windows in the police department. Now I'm shocked to hear that we have to move to Windows operating system in the city. But didn't you say, Chief Drohan, that this was to communicate with other police operations around the county and this EIS to move over to the Windows?
Yeah, it was Executive Information Systems is the CAD records management vendor, and they're the ones, they sent us a memo saying that the interface to Novell has been problematic for them, and we're the only ones left. And so they recommended that that we switch over. And I understand the city manager's concern, and we have been talking with Steve, our IT person, and it does. We should probably do some further discussion on it. But
Taser incident, and so I assume that the video that's in there will stop the he said, she said, we said, they said, because it'll be public information and available to anyone.
Exactly. One of the benefits of it is, as you saw, what it was a couple of years ago, the one of the sheriff's videos of a shooting incident provided crucial evidence. In addition to civil litigation and the he said, she said, if somebody complains to the police department, and we can play that video, and they said it happened this way, and the video shows different, or vice versa. It's very valuable for both internal investigations and for evidence.
Okay, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. Okay, comments. Betty, you want to start?
Yeah, I guess I'm disappointed that we can't use this for personnel or are choosing not to do that. I understand that we have needs for equipment, as all departments do. I hear Mr. Hendricks' concern about setting us in motion in a direction that he's not prepared to go with his other departments, and that coordination would be important. And what I can't figure out is how the grant works, that if we need to say it's for something, then you can back it out, or if we need to say it's not for that item, and then we can put it back later. So it sounds like what Mr. Hendricks was saying, I think what you were referring to in terms of wording our motion, is if we move the $10,000 to the miscellaneous under 6, then it can always be put back. I think, is that what satisfies both needs here?
The attorney is nodding, so yes, it sounds like it. Okay, Bill?
I think that I could also support leaving the money where it is with a proviso that if the switch doesn't work out, you can then move it to one of the other accounts. But at some point in time, we're going to have to do it anyway, so I'd just leave the money there with the idea that it can be moved if it proves not practical.
Rick?
Nothing other than what I already said.
Okay. Melanie? All right. I find it unfortunate that we have to put a security gate on our police car parking area, but I do understand with the evidence storage, too, that that becomes an issue. I guess I would ask the city attorney, which is easier or more efficient, Rob, to say that...
Either.
Either one? Okay, so we can have it as is with the caveat that should this not be practical for the entire city, then it would go into your miscellaneous funding. Does that sound good? Okay.
And Mr. Hendricks, is that work for you?
Yes, as long as it's not a mandate, I'm fine. We just need to do some planning.
All right.
Madam Mayor, I move that we adopt resolution number 4507 as it is written, with the provision that if it's not practical to change the software, that the money be moved to one of the other compartments.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you. And next item, B2, the resolution adopting the Development Impact Fee Program and amending the Master Fee Schedule. Bruce?
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Council members. At your last meeting on September 10th, the Council opened a public hearing and took a comment on the proposed public facilities fee study. The Council gave us direction to place that on today's agenda. We have an accompanying resolution that would implement this. The fees were discussed at that meeting, and the fees are accordingly set in the attachment to the resolution. If the fees go into effect today, if the Council adopts this, the state requires a minimum of 60 days before it's effective. So the 60th day falls on a Friday, which is a holiday, so it would roll over to the following Monday, which is November 26th at the earliest. I believe the city attorney will confirm this, but if the council's interested, they can certainly set that date back further for the effective date. And just in towards a general comment, we took a very conservative approach at justifying these impact fees. And there were a couple other things we wanted to draw to your attention. Please remember the council gave us direction to have a 500-square-foot exemption, which would allow folks to come in to build a garage for a single-family residence. That is in your most recent resolution that's attached to your packet. And then there is the concept of a cumulative addition. So, for example, somebody couldn't come in 5 different years and ask for 500-square-foot additions and go underneath that threshold and circumvent the fee ordinance. So it's kind of a cumulative it's a provision to prevent cumulative additions without paying the proper impact fees. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
With me to kind of zoom in on them a little bit, because I think everybody in this room is very concerned, and people at home, too. I hear as many rumors as everyone else, actually. And one of the things that I've heard is that people in town think that these development impact fees have come up all of a sudden, and that nobody was looking at this until just recently, and nobody was giving public notice. So this actually started in early 2005 when we were delivered this development fee study by the Home Builders Association, which clearly showed that Morro Bay was trailing by a wide margin all other cities in the county. And so, yes, I grew concerned, and then the rest of council grew concerned about, are we charging the appropriate development impact fees? And so then we had a meeting in July 25th, 2005. There was a public meeting that clearly said that we needed to explore the feasibility of current revenue program alternatives. Our consultant that night talked about development impact fees on the television. August 22nd of 2005, there was another public meeting where the agenda actually said it was a report and discussion of development impact fees. March 7th, 2006, another public meeting on the same topic. August 28th, 2006, another public meeting on the same topic. A Tribune headline that I know I brought in somewhere in October to talk about how Paso Robles had voted to increase them. San Luis has also voted to increase them. And then January 8th, 2007, there was a public meeting. And actually, we've had to pay out considerable money for the justification studies that proved that there was a nexus between impacts and our needs and the fees we were charging. So we paid $27,000 January 8th, 2007. We okayed that. And then April 23rd at a public meeting, another $20,000. And then finally on September 10th, a public meeting and a public hearing where we first entertained these development impact fees. And the consultant was here, and I think the resolution tonight is a result of about the last 2.5 years of process. And so I just wanted to put that out there.
All right, this is a public hearing. If you wish to speak on this item, I'm going to give about half an hour to public comment. So how many people wish to speak? If you could all line up and I could get a head count, then we can determine how much time each person can speak. And those of you who aren't speaking directly to it can certainly wave your hands in support. That's very effective, and we do see that. All right, is that everyone who wants to speak? Ending with the gentleman in the baseball cap? Okay. I'm just counting. I'm just saying you're the last one in line. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. All right, is everybody in line now that wants to speak? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. And the gentleman in the blue jacket, raise your hand. You're the last one. Okay, I count 17. Is that what everybody else gets? I got Lanny. Okay, going for half an hour. We'll go for 34 minutes. 2 minutes each, please.
Good evening, council members. My name is Al Hoyt. I'm an architect working on a project at 501 Embarcadero. It's called Embarcadero Landing. This is a project for Ken Scott, a contractor, who I first met in 1998 when I first moved to Morro Bay. We've been working on this project over 4 years together. The first Planning Commission submittal was in November 05, where we got input, and we finally got Planning Commission approval of that concept in February 06. Later that year, we got approval from the City Council. So in May of 06, we got City Council approval. We went for the final approval a couple months ago. We got some more input, more than just colors and trash container locations, but we had to really redo the whole plan to incorporate some more other ideas, which we did. So we got final council approval a couple months ago. That project has been in planning, has been in the submitted to building permit. It does not have Coastal Commission approval. Former Mayor Kathy Novak has been working with Ken to try to get that approval. He's actually trying to get before the Coastal Commission since February. I don't know the real date. Maybe Kathy knows when we're going to be submitting it or presenting that project. But in the meantime, the planning...
The hotel that sits there was built in the 1920s and has undergone several bad additions since then. Right now, we have been exploring the opportunity, which we believe is unique, to improve that area by putting in a new hotel that consists of 48 rooms, underground parking, and a much-needed conference center. If you make these changes that you're considering making, if you approve the enormous increases, that will increase the fees for our project to approximately $250,000. Let me say that again, $250,000. Okay? Those fees will be in addition to other costly fees that I know you will be asking for, such as sidewalks, curbs, gutters installation along Beach and Morrow Streets. Those improvements are estimated to cost us $100,000. So with that $100,000 and your $250,000 in fees, that makes the project ridiculously overpriced and undoable. Penciled out, if the project is built and we run at 50% occupancy, you stand to gain $105,120 in bed tax annually. That is five times what you are receiving right now from us. Let me say that would be $1 million over a 10-year period. So my questions for you are, what will you do? Will you look to the short-term gain and increase fees to a point that will affect a project to $250,000 and make it unfeasible, or will you see the long-term benefits of increasing the fees proportionately over time so that they don't have a negative impact on a city with an already negative growth rate? Will you stifle business, or will you promote growth? Will you bite the hand that feeds the city by suppressing a clean industry such as tourism? Will you be content with leveling our bed tax? And if you are, I hope you will be happy looking at the dirt and weeds running along Beach and Morrow Streets until you, the city, come up with your own funds to improve it. Also, just because you mentioned it 100 times, it's like my kids. They ask for candy a lot, but I don't always give it to them. Thank you. Please, please, please. If we're going to have, please, wave your hands. You start applauding, we're just going to cut it off, okay?
Hi. My name is Greg Mead. I'm from 385 Kings Avenue here in Morro Bay. I've been a contractor for 30 years. I recently moved here from Mammoth Lakes, California, where it's a similar town to Morro Bay, that it's tourist-oriented and such. I was president of the Contractors Association for the past 2 years and vice president the year before. The DIF fees were, I call it development impact fees, were brought into Mammoth 2 years ago. Since that time, all commercial activity in Mammoth has ceased. There has not been one single permit pulled in Mammoth since the DIF fees were put in because the commercial rates were similar to yours, way too exorbitant. People would rather just go to another town than to invest in your city. And as I heard a member here said last year, that we need more commercial activity in this town to help promote income coming in through your taxes and bed taxes and such, including those in those the large development that happened up there. A huge hotel pulled out and pulled millions of dollars of influx of money to be brought into to Mammoth. It was disintegrated. So I would hope you're not going to do that. Also, I would hope you'd not do an increase in fees when there's a recession going on. You might think about doing this when the economy is going up, but this is really suicide to this town by you doing it. One-third of the people I understand in San Luis Obispo County are employed somehow through the construction industry, and you're basically removing all their income from this area. They're going to be going someplace else. Garages, clean up the streets and yards, and I would hope that you would think that you would let them be built no matter what size the guy wants to build, not limited to 500 square feet, because it's basically going to make Morro Bay look more beautiful by having a garage.
Thank you very much.
I'll just quit right there. Thank you.
Thank you. The waving is good, folks. I appreciate that.
John Barta. I want to point out that these fees that are being proposed are in addition to the fees that people are already paying. You spent taxpayer money to hear what you wanted to hear, and now you seem shocked when people's oxes are finally getting gored and they're standing up to you. Well, This scheme reminds me of that old baseball movie, only this time the mantra is, if you tax them, they will come. Well, they won't come. People make choices, and with outrageous fees like these, they will let their feet do their talking. This will become a de facto building moratorium for all except the very rich. And when you take high fees and multiply that by zero projects, you get zero money. You are shooting yourselves in the foot, but the damage won't stop there. When no one builds new houses...
$25, which I thought was a little steep, but I paid them, especially in lieu of upcoming events. I had Kathy recalculate that when the new fees are, if they are instituted, it goes to $43,925 for a single-family home. My plan is for a second home on that same property for my mother, which I have plans in my truck to submit tomorrow. But I'm afraid that it's going to be too exuberant. And again, going along with everyone else, it's kind of like if you... raise the gas prices tomorrow up to $12 or $13 a gallon, a lot of you might start walking a little more. Well, we may stop building. I had, and I appreciate you, the ones that return my emails, but I had seven projects on the agenda, and going along with what the newspaper said about provided it doesn't discourage new development in the city, that's just the newspaper article. Well, I will go on record to say those seven projects won't be permittable if the new fees go into tact. And I did some research, and maybe all of you did, and not in San Luis Obispo County, but Fresno and some of the outlying areas where I also build. Tulare is $5.50 a square foot for all the impact fees, everything. Visalia was a little higher. It was around $7. Tulare County was one of the lower ones, and it was about $450 a square foot. So Morro Bay may be a little behind in their fees, and I think that it's only right that they can raise them. But as the paper said, it's a huge impact fee increase.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Kirk Najarian. You know, I understand there may be a need to increase our fees because they are low, but, you know, adding another $20,000 to a 1,500-square-foot house is extremely excessive. These costs will eventually pass down to the home buyers and consumers here, and you guys seem to be worried about affordable housing. This isn't going to create affordable housing. It's only going to make it worse. And this is going to stifle any type of new commercial construction around here. And the older buildings that we have that people wanted to tear down and build new construction, they're not going to do that. It's going to be too expensive. We need to come up with a realistic and affordable fees that are based not on square footage, but on the type of project that's being built. Basing it on square footage, especially if you include the garage, which don't impact services of any kind, has the appearance of only penalizing and attempting to influence the size of the homes being built in Morro Bay. A three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath house, whether it's 1,400 square feet or 2,400 square feet, still a three-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bath house. So I just, you know, please reconsider these fees carefully and come up with a fair and equitable cost structure because these are excessive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, I'm Dan Riddell, a Morro Bay lot owner. The imposition of this outrageous fee will create a terrible burden for Morro Bay lot owners. You're going to hear about it for, I guess, about the next 30 minutes. You are imposing a 1,000% tax on the lot owners, and you didn't even notify them. Nothing went out to the lot owners telling them that this was going to happen, and they're the ones that are going to be paying. You know, your staff says that this is totally legal, but I would have to ask you, and everyone in here will ask you, is it ethical that the people paying it aren't going to be notified, haven't been notified, they didn't even have a chance to be here tonight? The reason they're here tonight is just word of mouth. I think it's unfair to charge a square foot charge or amount when statistics show clearly that there's only 2.5 people in each home in Morro Bay. I mean, that's the average amount of people in every home in Morro Bay, and yet you're going to charge a square foot charge, which penalizes somebody that wants three bedrooms or an office. The amount should be per lot, not per square foot. I would ask you to modify this resolution and make it more reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Michael Koss with Total Development Company. Nice to see you again. My project that I've been working on, this fee increase affects hugely. And most of you know that that project includes two very low-income units and 16 one-bedroom units that are intended to be for workforce housing. They're smaller units to keep prices down, which your staff asked me to put in. This fee increase adds $280,000 to the cost of this project for 16 units. $280,000. That money...
Dressed quite as tidy as you. I'm one of those builders that makes so much money that we can afford to bail out the financial woes of this town. But I have to work long hours, and I worked right up until the last minute so I could come to this meeting, skip a class at Cuesta. You know, we've got financial woes at my home, too, and I've been watching the city here, and some of the actions baffle me. I thought maybe I could emulate them and solve some of my financial problems. I thought, well, first maybe I could burn my house to the ground and somebody would come along and give me the money to build a new one that might be as pretty as the homes in San Luis, but you know, that really didn't make enough sense to me. I have a nice driveway, and it leads up to a rock in the front of my home, and I thought, well, maybe I should put another new driveway in that leads to that same rock alongside the existing one. But somehow that didn't seem like that would make me any money either. You know, I have a son who's followed my footsteps. He's in construction, and I let him use some of my equipment from time to time for a fee, and I thought, well, maybe I'll just tell him that I'm going to start charging him 10 times what I've been charging him in the past for the equipment he uses. And I tried that, but he told me to jump in the lake, and now he works for somebody else. So, you know, I like it here, and I thought I might be able to stay here the rest of my life since I've lived here so far, the last 51 of them, of the years I've been alive, but I may be forced to leave too. This is just poor management from your positions all the way down through city staff. You don't come up in 2 years' time and say, you know, we've got a problem here, we have to fix it, let's take a small group that I think we can extort the funds out of to bail out our town
and
put the burden on them.
Thank you.
Okay. My name is June French. I have lived in Morro Bay for the past 8 years. I'm 74 years old and live on a fixed income. I've been planning to add a new bedroom and bathroom and remodel my kitchen to make everything wheelchair accessible so I can live out my remaining days at home. This proposed increase of nearly 1,000% could end my hopes for doing this. I think this will hurt many more people like me who haven't read today's paper, nor those other papers. There must be alternatives for raising revenues, maybe smaller incremental fees over a period of years. Put your thinking caps on, please. Little people like me need your help.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council, Joseph Anderton, local general contractor. Moved here 24 years ago, lived in my car for the first 4 months of being in town. I was an indigent. Had a tool bags, saw, had a trade. For 25 years, I've done this trade. I got married 19 years ago to my wife that I've been together with for 24 years. 8 years ago, we bought our first house in Morro Bay. We finally got a piece of the pie, our dream. It's 57 years old, single wall construction, post and pier foundation. 5 years ago, we had an earthquake. And guess what? FEMA came and said, we want to help you because your foundation is failing. Your house should be torn down. 5 years ago, the building cost was about $134 a square foot for what we have. FEMA came in and offered us $70,000 and told us we could do the whole project. Guess what? The FEMA funds didn't meet the Morro Bay requirement funds, the square foot building price. It's taken us 8 years so far to even think about building a new house, remodeling what we have, imposing $19,000 more of fees onto us now. We are a working family, barely afford to live here. That's going to take us another 3 to 5 years to save. My wife works at the post office 21 years. I've worked in this town for 25. I've worked and built over 150 homes in this town that are 1,500 square feet to 6,000 square feet. I'm asking you to let me have my dream. Don't make my wife mad at me when I go home tonight and say, honey, it's going to be another 5 or 6 years before we can do this, because my 50, 60-hour weeks that I work helping people like you, helping elderly people take care of their properties, we're not going to be able to afford it. It's going to take us 5 or 6 more years longer, honey. Do you know how she's going to feel about that? Do you know how I feel about that, trying to be a provider to my wife and give her her dream, the thing we've worked for? All I can say is compensation, minimization. Please don't kill everybody in town. You talk about affordable housing. Jen. You've been talking about affordable housing, low-income housing.
And that's real exciting. But what kind of a future can I hold for my family? Are they going to be able to live in Morro Bay? Are they going to be able to afford to be here like, you know, like Joe said? A couple of us got a piece of the pie. You know, we're trying to scratch it out, and you're making it a lot more difficult. We're not everybody that comes from Fresno, comes from everywhere and buying up our whole town. There's got to be another alternative for these impact fees on people from out of town. Or sometimes, I know you do bed tax and you have all that other kind of tax, but what about the people that grew up around here, live around here, make a living here? Fishermen are hurting. You want to dent the builders now, too, and all the contractors that put this town together but keep this town rolling? I don't think that's a good idea, and I'd sure like to see you come up with another alternative.
Thank you.
Reg Baldwin, Morro Bay. I have to say, I disagree with a lot of these people. I don't think there should be any impact fees at all. Last time I gave you some good reasons why I thought there shouldn't, and I got one more for you now. You directed the consultant to justify the highest possible impact fees that you could charge, and he did. He did what you told him to do. I didn't understand a lot of his figures, and I didn't agree with a lot of his assumptions, but there's one big thing he left out, and that was the positive impact of new house building in this town. I called your city finance director to find out if there were any stats on the positive cash flow to the city for a new home being built, and they didn't have any numbers. So the best numbers I can come up with was for a 1,500 square foot home that's built in Morro Bay, the city's probably increasing their tax revenue by about $2,000 a year. That's every year. So you take that over a 10 or a 20 or 30 year period, it far outweighs the negative impact fees that your consultant talked about. There's a saying that says, you know, any story sounds true until somebody tells the other side and sets the record straight. We need the other side told. We need to have staff, your consultant, come up with the positive impact on new development in Morro Bay. So I would ask that you do that. Ask that you look at both sides before you make your final decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Karen Rosa, and I want to say that we own property here at Morro Bay also, that we've been waiting a very long time. We bought it in 1987 and hope to be able to build a house on it. I've just hired an architect and a surveyor to do that, and my husband's born and raised here. Our three children are born and raised here. His dad is born and raised here. And whether or not my three children could even have a home in this area is the same question. And I know you've seen me here for the affordable housing meetings that I've attended and attended and attended. And it does seem the opposite. And even more worse than that is My husband works for the city of Morro Bay, and he's probably the lowest paid employee you possibly have. So I can't imagine how it is we'll even be able to do that with these type of fees. So I would just like you to also consider the timing and an alternative way as well. So thank you. And I agree with everything else that was said.
Thank you.
Good evening again. Same people, same guy. I'd like to stop.
You still have to say your name again.
Okay. Mayor Peters, Lanny McKay, Honorable Council, City staff. I'd like to stop a minute and say, how the heck did we get where we are and what are we trying to do? I think that we can stop and say, well, let's see. Maybe it's analogous to what happened to the city of Morro Bay when Arnie Schwarzenegger said, well, we'll just take all this money. And we got hit hard, trying to make up for somebody else's woes. It seems to me that that's what we're doing now, trying to make up for impact fees that did not get paid along the way or assessments that did not get made along the way. I'll take the Harborview tract as an example. I know that there are at least six lots up there undeveloped. And when that hat track was built, the developer had to put in sewer mains and curb and gutter and water, and everybody, each lot got assessed for that. None of them got assessed for taking care of the mess at Radcliffe and Main. And I guess the city's supposed to take care of that now. It should have been the developer's problem, but I don't see that being addressed. It's the same kind of thing. In 1954, the county said, hey, you guys, we need sewer.
I appreciate it. I know we had to limit time, and I appreciate your cooperation on that. We did hear you. Okay. Any questions after those comments? Anyone?
I have a question.
Okay, Melody?
I have one number.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll reopen it for one person. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Good evening. Scott Crabtree, Morro Bay resident, off and on since I was 2 years old. Jack Surflew, first mayor of Morro Bay, is a relative of mine, no longer with us. The impact fees are absolutely lunacy. If we were able to redo the power plant, which used to be the source of money for the city of Morro Bay, that would be a simple fix pretty much for everything. And as far as the lease deal with Violet League, it's complete lunacy also to build a convention center with no parking available, and we don't even have the people that want to come here to have a convention yet.
Okay,
so
this is for
I think that needs another, pardon me?
This is for development fees. That's
yes, but
about.
I need to throw it in real quick because I have to go. So I need to throw it in real quick and I'm sorry. Hi, folks. So I just wanted to make that real clear because I have to leave.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. All right. All right, Melody. Yes. Closing the public hearing. Melody.
Question for Mr. Ambo. There's a question about when this would go into effect in terms of a person's process through the system. The one gentleman talking about going before Coastal and concept plans and such. And isn't it true that if they've pulled a permit by the November 26th date, if that's what we decide tonight, and paid their fees, they will pay the older, lower fees, the existing fees?
That's correct.
Okay. Is there any give and take about when we can set those fees in the building process, or is it right at the time when they pull a permit and pay the fees?
You could move the effective date. You can't move it up, but I understand you can move it back. So you could move it.
I understand that we can change the date of it, but I'm wondering if we can change where we place the fees in a person's project. Do they pay the fees right when they pull the permit, and that's when? So if they're pulling any permits before the date that we set tonight, they'll do them at the...
Yeah, that would... We've dealt with that. We've had people come in with a set of plans and say, well, I want to pay the fees. And it kind of creates a kind of a speculative plan check process where you get a bunch of projects in the pipeline that aren't really ripe enough or even adequate to even submit for minimal standards. So, and we've had some history with that, so we would recommend that we do it at building permit issuance. If you're going to move it back, then maybe clear out the pipeline with everything that's in there, but it would really be problematic to speculate,
and allow people to pay fees prematurely before they were even ready to get issued.
Right, because the hurry up that people would experience would cause a lot of confusion at the counter.
Especially if they didn't have discretionary permit approval.
Right, and as to the time when we set these, by law, we can't set them any sooner than 60 days, but we could also set them at 90 or 120. Does that make any difference in your office? Because you're saying right now that you don't wish to take these hurry-up kind of projects and fees because it creates too much confusion. Would another 30 days be helpful, do you think?
Quite a few projects that are in the pipeline. I don't know where they are in terms of where they are in the planning process. There are some that are awaiting discretionary project approval and some that are in plan check and some actually that have been issued and ready to be issued. And we've even called folks and reminded them they may want to come and get their permits because the fees are cheaper. You could set it out for any period of time if you wanted to kind of clear the pipeline out. I think you could also make some kind of an effective date that says, you know, any projects submitted after this date will trigger any new permit. So, for example, if you had something that was submitted perhaps by the 28th would be vested or may have some kind of a grandfather provision with the older fees. Maybe looking at Rob for, he looks like he may have some idea.
You could set, for as far as the date of that it would be enacted, you can set that out any time after the 60 days. So any time after that. There's two dates that you try to go with, which can be really clear, and that would be either building permits, the date those are issued, or deemed complete. That's when you've got somewhat of a vested right when that project is deemed complete, and that can be as soon as 30 days after an application's filed. You don't always like to see an application filed as being the date because then anybody can file an application even if it's not got all the information needed. So those are the dates that you could either go with when it's deemed complete or when building permits are picked up.
Of service so high that it would impact the existing ratepayers to maintain that same level. In other words, there may have been some more expense placed on the existing residents as opposed to trying to find a very conservative basis and just really oriented towards mitigating the impact of new development. So in general, it's been a very conservative approach.
Yeah, I've got a question. We've got a comparison survey, this sheet. Where do we stand now? This is what with the estimated new fees. Where do we stand right now? What would our total be?
Well, right now, the recommended fee is, like, for example, for a theoretical house, a new house of 1,500 square feet.
Is that what this is? Whatever
right.
This is equivalent to, what is the number now?
Well, that was if it's from the staff report we had the last time?
Yeah.
Yes. The fee for a new 1,500 square house would be $19,208. And for purposes of comparison, the same house, if it was permitted, for example, in, I think it's the highest is, let me see if I have it here. Here it is. The highest fees are actually in Paso Robles at $33,000.
No, I was asking what is ours now. This is what our estimated amount would be. What is it now?
Oh, right now for a single-family residence, we only charge water and sewer.
And what's the total?
About $2,600.
$2,600, okay. So we're way low in the county right now.
Right.
That's what I wanted to find out, where we're starting from. Okay, and then could you go over the charge per lot versus per square foot again for me, please?
The basis is on square footage.
Right, and there was a comment about why isn't it per lot. What's the difference in the consideration there?
The character of our development activity has really been primarily residential. We're a built-out community, as you know. And we don't have a lot of new undevelopable land, which is more of a traditional program that a lot of impact fees are operating under. The impact fees that are probably the closer fit to our development activity involve new square footage additions to existing residences versus new subdivision of vacant land.
Okay. And also, this is a question for Rob. There was a question about the lot owners being notified. Is that something that is a requirement? And if not, why not?
You've met all the requirements of Government Code 6600, also known as AB 1600, for noticing this hearing.
Okay. The other, just a comment I wanted to make about garages, a couple of people have brought that up, that shouldn't be included. Unfortunately, a lot of our garages are built as garages and turn into apartments 2 weeks later. So it's not an argument for or against, but it's a fact of life in Morro Bay. Okay, so any other questions, Betty?
Madam Mayor, just to add to that, I think it's important to note that we've excluded that first 4,000 or 400 feet, right? Am I interpreting that right? First 500 square feet anyways. And so it's above that for the garage.
Right. Oh, okay, I did have another one. Our park fee is higher than anybody except for San Luis Obispo. Is that because of the number of parks versus the number of lots? Or why is it so high?
The answer that I got was that, and we touched on this when the expert was here the last time, it's just that the parks fees are usually the higher the fees anywhere they do these because it's such a land-intensive proposition and our land values are higher. And we have urbanized land values in this staff report versus rural land values in the county.
Okay.
And it's just because it's a land-intensive operation. No other city operations has anywhere close to that amount of land that they maintain or deal with in new facilities.
Okay, let's just start with comments. Rick? Okay.
Yeah, the one that sticks out to me is the 8745 under parks. I'd like to see that halved. That would fall in line a little bit more with the Tascadero and Paso and still set us above Arroyo Grande, Grover, and Pismo. And I think it's more reasonable. I just think that's kind of out of line. That's the only thing I have on this.
Okay, well, in general, what are your feelings? You want to...
In general, I support this because nobody can remember the last time we did it. The numbers don't lie. We're behind all these other cities anyway. I think we've paid for the fact that we haven't done this earlier. It's kind of a shock to everybody because it seems quite high, and it's because we haven't done it. But I still think the park one's about twice what it should be. Other than that, I support it.
And do you have any thoughts on when it should be implemented?
Say what again?
When it should be implemented.
I'd like to see everybody that's in the pipeline now not be affected by our decision tonight. I think it's the right and the fair thing to do. So however long that takes, I don't want to say 60 days because that might not be enough to clear a couple of the folks that are already got their permits in. I don't think once they have them in, it's fair or the right thing to do to tell them they're going to have to pay twice that. So however long it takes to get those folks through the pipeline.
How she's ever going to pay that sewer fee. When I see those individuals, you know, and they call me up, I wonder, well, I've got to spread this out a bit. We have to pay these huge costs. Our employees are in negotiations with us now. How will I pay any raises for these people to keep them here and not running off to Paso or Tascadero, who have high development impact fees? Today we got emails. You know, nobody will talk in favor of development impact fees. I've talked to people in town who are in favor of them, who say that they're sound business sense. They make lots of sense, but nobody will talk in favor of them. And I think we all kind of know why, but a couple of them sent, a realtor and a local business person both sent, very strong endorsements of this measure. One of them came from San Diego and said that if you've been in San Diego and watched, no fees charged for years, and now San Diego's nearing bankruptcy. So I'm in favor of these. I'm wondering if we can do it in 60 days so that we stop anything coming in, but we can also at the same time take anything that's in the pipeline by 60 days. Is that possible, Mr. Ambo?
Absolutely. So that would mean any applications that are submitted between now and November 26 would pay the current fee. And then theoretically, then if somebody came in and submitted an application for even a discretionary permit, if they came in on that on the 27th, then right. They'd be subject to the new fees. And that would clear out everybody that's in the system now.
Well, I'd like to clear out the system that's in now, not people who are coming between now and November 26.
Okay.
For example, the gentleman who's got the Embarcadero project. So that would be my preference, to clear the pipeline as it exists today. And I've heard a couple of other pretty sad stories, too, about people who are in, but they haven't actually paid their fees yet or something. But they're in your office, and then at the end of the 60 days, or anybody new between now and then, you know, I don't think they can actually do it. I don't want to cause too much confusion in his office. And if we say that everybody who can submit something by November 26th, his office would be in absolute chaos. Okay, I was in there the day after our last meeting, and listening to your staff with great admiration, actually.
Okay, please, comments from the audience. We need to talk now.
Anyway, I'll end my comments with that. That would be my preference, that we would enact this in 60 days, but that we would take everything that is as of today with Mr. Ambo and his pipeline, what he considers his pipeline, it's his work list, that those people are insured under the old fees.
Okay, Betty?
I'd like to go to what Mr. Grantham pointed out on our estimated for the different categories here. The audience doesn't know there are general government, police, parks, fire, storm drain, traffic, water, and sewer. And I appreciate what Mr. Grantham was saying about the parks, because it does look higher than most of the other cities except for one. But if you do that same kind of analysis on general government, it also is higher than the other cities. And stormwater drain is actually extremely low. It's not even making $100. So I'm not in favor of picking out parks in particular and saying, okay, you have to go down arbitrarily just because you look out of whack with everybody else. So unless there's, I guess I'm not feeling comfortable with that. So unless there's some other way to negotiate that, or, you know, I know that we're going to be dealing with stormwater drains, and look how low that is. So I guess I'm comfortable with where it's at this point. And I'm hearing what you both said about clearing the pipeline, whatever that definition means for Mr. Ambo. He knows what that is for current people, that I could go with the 60 days.
Bill?
Mayor? May I have a comment? You certainly can discuss lowering any of the fees that have been proposed in the nexus there, but you wouldn't be able at this point in time, without going back to our consultant or expert, raise any of them without him reanalyzing it. So you can't reduce one and do it right. You can only go one way.
Okay. A lot of these things were based on proportion or square footage. That's why parks are so high. And I've looked at that, and I don't want to pick on the parks department or parks all the time, but we could build out the city entirely, and we're not going to put any more parks in. So I think because of the land-intensive use of parks, it's a very high fee, and I think that what we really ought to be charging, if we're going to do these fees, is what adding that square footage actually costs us in infrastructure. So I would look at these things and say, you know, police and fire,
compared to us, right now we are woefully below. I think everyone will agree with that. The next highest one is $4,286. We're at $2,600. That's way low. So obviously we have to increase our fees somewhat. However, I also look at these other cities and know that all of them have, I believe, the property within their city limits to include major development still, which Morro Bay does not have. We simply don't. There's only one major lot that I can think of that would have a large development on it that could bring in fees like this that would be substantial. What we have is a lot of very small beach cottages that people move into because it's what they can afford, and then when they can afford to add on to it, that's what they do to accommodate a little larger home for their families. That's who we are in Morro Bay, and I think we need to pay attention to that. Some of the comments, too, you know, you don't do this in a depressed market because you already have a slowdown in building. We've seen that with projects right now that are not selling. It is a difficult market right now. And I know I remember in the early 90s when the building, the whole industry just kind of went in the all the way downhill. And we lost a lot of those people. A lot of them had to move away because they couldn't get work anymore. And I don't want us to shoot ourselves in the foot. What I would like to see, and I totally agree. I know our consultant did a good job. They looked at everything. They compared us with the other cities in the county. I don't know if they compared us as far as who we are and what we deal with in our community. So what I would like to do is to increase these fees by half, which would come out to $9,604 for a new project, and bring it back in a year and see if indeed that has been something that has worked, that people are still able to build, and then if it is, we can increase in the other half next year. I think it's a way to give our community a chance to get through this difficult recession, if that's what it is, and to maintain the possibilities of building homes. So that would be my suggestion. In fact, I'll make it a motion.
Madam Mayor, before you do, how would you prorate that out to the different categories?
I'd cut everything in half.
You'd cut even the stormwater drain at $78, you'd cut in half?
Well, okay, let's leave it at this. If we can cut parks more and government more, that's fine, and keep the storm drains and the things that we need up, that's fine with me. I don't know if we can do that. But if we can, I would like to see us go in at half this rate, and that's my motion, that we implement half of this raise now, look at it in a year, and still let everybody that's in the pipeline now get through the pipeline and start this January. Well, start this as soon as that pipeline is cleared. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you.
Okay.
Discussion.
Absolutely. I think you're going to the other extreme, frankly, by doing that. I think if you're going to do it, you need to look at it by category and see where is our need. Certainly to cut a storm drain of $75 in half is inappropriate. Even if you took Mr. Grantham's proposal of $4,000 away from parks, that already brings it down to $15,000, which already puts us in the lower half of all the cities. Okay, I think you're defeating our purpose here by doing that as well. I think if you want to eyeball, or as Mr. Grantham said, okay, this and Mr. Pierce was saying, the parks thing, there's a reason to bring that down. I see a great need with parks still, but if we're not going to be expanding there, I can see bringing that down. I'm not sure what all is involved with the general government, but if we can bring that down a little bit, but to arbitrarily say half, give me some basis.
I'll half with that caveat that they can work it out as to what we really need and where it can be reduced more easily. And remember, whatever we get, it's an increase over what we have now. So we are increasing it.
All right.
The discussion. It's open for discussion.
I have a comment. I'll say absolutely ridiculous. You know, what happens here is we go through a long, drawn-out process, and we pay a consultant, and I yell and scream about the consultants, but on this one we had to hire an outside consultant. And we spent $47,000 of the taxpayers' money based on a comment made a couple of years ago that this was the only one that could make that money back for us. Okay, that all the other ideas were not going to make us the money back. I agree with Councilmember Grantham that
I wondered why parks were so high, but we asked the consultant last time, and he explained it to us, and all of us sat here.
You need to respect ours, and we haven't made a decision yet.
Madam Mayor.
Bill.
I would like to say that political will had something to do with it, but I had these concerns when I talked to Mr. Ambo on the phone this morning, long before you folks showed up. I think I like the idea of the total. I think I would like to pair out of general government a little more than half. Well, I'll live with half, but if I would prefer to take more out of those categories, parks and general government, and leave a higher percentage in police, fire, streets, and storm drains, as long as we don't exceed the $9,600.
Mr. Pierce and the rest, could we not even just leave alone anything that's not in the thousands? I mean, I almost find it ludicrous that we would want to have something that's in the hundreds of dollars or less than $100. So if you want to knock off on the parks, fine. If you want to knock off a little bit on the government, let's do that. But let's not do it just to get to the half.
No, that's fine. I never meant to have it be every
arbitrary.
Single.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Mr. Grantham, did you say knock off 4,000 or to knock parks in half?
Yeah.
Half. So what would that give us?
About
4,377, or close to that.
Actually, I'm using the table E2 in here that gives the per square foot charge for parks.
Mm-hmm.
And right now it's $583 per square foot. So if we cut that in half, that would be $290 saved per square foot.
Could you tell us what page you're on?
I'm back in the attachment A. And it's very early in it. It's this table right here. You see this right here? Page 5. And so when he said cut it in half, cut parks in half, I see that we take $1,281 down to around $10 per square foot. But it's still per square foot.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
We were told that that is the
standard.
Way people do business.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do $2,600 worth of fees like we're doing per unit. Nobody else does business that way. So go ahead and cut parks in half if you want. You cannot cut water, wastewater. You cannot cut storm drains. I mean, they're remarkably low right now at a nickel for a storm drain. So go down to $10 per square foot. But I think that's not the motion.
Okay, I just want to make a comment on political will. I'm not quite sure what your definition is, but my feeling is that my job is to respond to our community and what's best for them overall. And I understand that this would make us a lot of money, but it will only make us a lot of money if we have projects going on. And if the projects don't happen because they're too expensive, then it's not going to bring us that income. So I think by putting it in half now, and I just say not arbitrarily, and looking at it in a year and seeing if it works, and then if we're out of this bad building and housing market in a year, there may be absolute justification for taking it up again.
So may I clarify then on the same table that I was just talking about, table E2 on page 5, that you would go from on a single-family residence, you would go from $1,281 a square foot all the way down to $640 a square foot.
If that's what it comes out to, yes.
That's well, half.
Yes.
It's $47,000.
Are we defeating our purpose then here in terms of trying to get money that helps support our infrastructure? This whole thing's about infrastructure,
okay.
And
we
maintain the police department, maintaining the roads, maintaining the storm drains. This is only what's fair in terms of what our need is going to be, and yet we're already behind. Anyone who drove here tonight knows that we're already behind on our roads.
I understand that.
Madam Mayor.
But we would be going from, just a minute, let me clarify, we would be going from a current total of $2,600 to a new total of $9,600. So that is still a substantial increase.
No. Okay, these are called impact fees. This is the impact of new construction. It's
right.
Not a revenue generator per se, a way to make money.
I understand
can't
that.
Say, well, we drove on these streets. It's, okay, what impact does the next house mm-hmm. built have mm-hmm. on this mm-hmm. infrastructure? And it's not supposed to be punitive, and it's not supposed to be retroactive to rebuild streets. So as far as I'm concerned, The situation we're in now is a problem, but it's not the responsibility of the people who are trying to live here in the new house to make up for it.
And I'm not saying that it is, but I'm saying this is to take care of what's going to impact in the future, and yet we know we're already behind, so what we're getting it isn't going to fix things at all, like you're saying. It's not, and it's going to barely keep us up because we're cutting with our consultant told us is barely going to cover what's coming to us in terms of impact. So it's like, so I'm you know, so and you're saying that's okay with you.
I understand that, but what I'm also saying is whatever it is, it's going to be more than we've been dealing with now. And I also have a problem with saying that a new single-family home built on a lot that's already paid for its sewer and those things, when the development went in and they bought the land, is going to make that great an impact by having a house on it. That I don't see logic in that. I'm sorry, I don't. They've already paid into those things.
But the consultant...
I can see them saying police and fire, yes, because then you got a new structure, you got new people. Mm-hmm. Those are impacts.
Madam Mayor, the consultant came up with these numbers based on the idea that commerce was going to continue. But if, in fact, raising the fees to that level causes a slowdown, then the estimates of the consultant, while the numbers look good, are not going to be what we get anyway. So I think we've got to look at the other end, as some of these folks said tonight. If we're going to stop construction by putting fees up where they are, then we've kind of defeated the purpose.
Madam Mayor, excuse me.
I would like to say, too, that the consultant based these fees based on a population study out, I think, to 2010, and a look at some of the capital improvement projects that we would have to put in place. And he came up with something like $7 million we've got to come up with between now and then. And he used that as his criteria for how he set these fees. So now you're saying that we basically, if we cut them in half, you know, we're going to have to find...
More important thing is
your mic went off.
Sorry, I just did that. I see that our public services director and our city manager might want to weigh in on this as an idea,
okay,
since they contracted and worked with this consultant more closely than we did.
I think that's an excellent idea. Mr. Ambo, what are your comments?
Well, as we indicated before, if you felt more comfortable and wanted to phase this in, we understand that. My question really related to, do you just want to reduce single-family residence fees, or do you want to get at multifamily, commercial, office, and industrial?
Across the board.
Okay. That's really the only question that I had. Maybe Bob would give you a better perspective.
Well, the only comment I had is I think Ms. DeMeritt accurately described the model from which the numbers are generated, so that there's a set of assumptions that you looked at in the consultant report about what needs to happen in the future based on our assumptions about our rate of growth and number of houses to be built and that sort of thing, and the projected future cost of that infrastructure, and a sharing of that future cost between new development from, say, this day forward and the folks that are already here. And based on that set of assumptions, there was a portion of the cost that is uncovered by the people that are already here, and that was the genesis of these per square foot numbers that we have for new development. So there is, and this is all legally required. It's done as a matter of statute, and that was why the statute was created. And if there is a bugaboo in the room, I'd have to tell you that it's the property tax law, because no longer do you have any control over the property tax to cover infrastructure costs, really. So this is what's happened sort of in lieu of property tax.
Okay, and I'm not saying that the consultant didn't do everything right. Obviously they did. I wouldn't even begin to question it. What they didn't, I think, what they didn't consider or add to their report was that if you increase the fees to the extent that you stop building, you're not going to get the result that they're predicting. So that's what my concern is. In this environment, in this financial and building situation that we are currently in, I think it would be detrimental rather than helpful at this point to go for the full amount. Shall we call the question? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No, and I also want to include here, since you've just done this for this crowd, that I would remind those people on a fixed income to please show up November 13th to talk about your sewer rates and show up by the hundreds and talk to us and see how we stand on those sewer rates.
Okay, that was 3-2 with Demerit and myself. Thank you. Thank you, and thank you for listening attentively. We appreciate that. I know this is a difficult situation. Thank you. All right, item B3, we are going to continue. I know, we're just going to continue B3.
No, you...
Do you want? Do you need a motion? Do you need a motion
yes.
to continue?
Yes.
I move that we continue item B3. Do I hear a second?
You need it.
Second.
You need it to the specific date also.
Does it need in October, you say?
Yeah.
We have the room cleared.
October 22nd.
October 22nd. Thank you.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, now we're on break.
Is that what the agenda says?
Thank you. All right, we had a discussion up here with Bill and Betty, and they came up with some additional direction for okay. staff.
And so that I would...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I got that.
Okay.
So the new fee would be still the new for the total area of cut is half of where we are across the board right. on all the fees. Across the only
total fee is going to be half. The individual places that you take it from are going to be government and parks.
Right. And that, okay. I just meant single-family, multifamily, office, commercial,
yes.
industrial.
Yes. Okay.
And we'll bring that back 2 weeks.
Okay.
Madam Mayor, just to worry this thing to death, the numbers on the very right-hand side of the exhibit that you have that shows all the categories of mm-hmm. fees and the breakdown, those are the numbers that we're talking about being cut yes. to half, right?
Right. Right.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we got that clear. Janine's been waiting very patiently. So let's go to our consent agenda. A1, A2, Betty, were you going to pull those?
Do you want me to say pull
A1
and
A2? Both of them? Yeah. Okay. All right. So A1.
A1 is the recommendation to use park and loo funds for the Coleman Rock Enhancement Plan and asphalt repair at Lila Kaiser Park. I had concerns about this in terms of keeping funds separate and what we were really talking about here. And Ms. Luker got back to me with my questions and assured me that the Del Mar parking lot is still going to be paved under other monies, which was one of my concerns. I was not clear on what was identified as the Morro Creek to Target Rock area that includes Coleman Park. For me, that was simply from where the power plant pulls its water in out to the rock. But there's a different picture that we're actually speaking to. I think Ms. Luker might put it on the overhead for us, that this actually includes going out the Embarcadero extension. And that's the part that's the harbor part that I didn't get. I thought it was just on the west side of the Embarcadero. So I think it's important for us to recognize that we're talking about going, splitting there and going both directions with these monies and this development. I can't say that I was ready to deal with the east side of the Embarcadero Road and what might be going along there. I'm willing to give money to the Coleman part and anything that might be on the west side of the Embarcadero. But to start going down that road, I'm not ready to do that.
Okay, and this was something that was discussed at both Parks and Recreation and the Harbor Board. And I want to clarify for people listening, this is park in lieu funds, not parking. I know that's very hard to pick up over the TV, but your advisory boards both voted in favor of this. Could you give us a little history on that?
I'll speak to the Coleman Park area, and then certainly Rick can talk to the Boatyard Project. We started a couple of months ago at the Recreation and Parks Commission level talking about the fact that Coleman Park is not a master plan. There's no final plan for Coleman Park. And as a result, we forwarded to the commission a recommendation to allocate money, $47,000, $48,000, to work on the master plan. Simultaneously, the Harbor Department and the Harbor Advisory Board was working on a continuation of the boatyard project, and at the commission level, commissioners in both boards said, you know, why don't you think about making the project into one, and that's where we're coming before you tonight. I'll hand it over to Rick to talk a little bit about his project goes farther back, really, than the Coleman Park Master Plan project does.
Thank you. Good evening, Council, Madam Mayor and Council. Andrew pretty much got all the elements. I guess I'd just double up on the idea that the City Council has already approved funds for some preliminary investigations, some additional preliminary investigations on siting of a boating access facility in the area of the North Embarcadero, north of the intake structure. That dates back to 1998. That funding that we were delayed for many years during consideration of the modernization, the power plant modernization project and the property ownership issues there. When those were resolved, we requested City Council approval of a $40,000 to do some preliminary engineering and planning on the project. As this came up, there's the board, the Harbor Advisory Board, and many people in the Harbor community are anxious to try and proceed on the project. And as this discussion surfaced on reciting the plan, we've had some changes in the habitat designations, making our plan, our previous proposal for the dry storage and boat repair yard, much more difficult. And also, Coleman Park now is a subject of discussion for planning as the boardwalk project has proceeded. So the logical thing for both boards, I think, was to recommend to you that we take a look at the entire area and see if...
Going on the west side.
No, it was always...
It was always on both
always
sides?
Always on the east side.
That might, would really, be my misunderstanding.
And I wouldn't probably use the terminology master plan because it's not that kind of effort. I think we're going to see if we can combine efforts and come up with some better preliminary designs for you to look on siting your future facilities in this area. I guess that... So we addressed the one concern you had.
My concern would be with the Coastal Commission.
Coastal Commission.
And if that would jeopardize the project.
And routing on Embarcadero.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly will have to go get a coastal permit. We are proposing marine-dependent, marine-related or marine-dependent facilities, which are the highest priority in the Coastal Act. So I would hope that these would get fair consideration there in siting these facilities.
I think my concern would be with the habitat potential impact that would jeopardize, not that it's marine-related, which, of course, is good and appropriate, but what that might entail.
Bruce had a comment.
Yes, Madam Mayor. Our objections to the classification of that are well-established on the coastal record. We've done a site-specific survey of that, and our biologists, as well as our biologist, the Caltrans biologist, and the State Parks biologist agreed with the recommendations that this wasn't a significant habitat. And we did lodge those objections at the hearing. So when we were just up there a couple of weeks ago, we told them that, you know, we would still like to challenge that. And they said, well, go ahead, do another biological study, and we'll take another look at it. You may recall, we couldn't even get them down here to take an on-the-ground survey of the area. So from our standpoint, we feel that we're in a pretty strong position, at least with a basis of facts, to submit the proposal.
Okay, Rob?
We're not even that far along. We're not in any permitting. We're not in any funding for a project. All we're looking for is Council's direction on going forward with the enhancement, the initial feasibility. The projects could be later on taken separately on doing Coleman Park and not the other part, or the part with the boat haul out could be done without the Coleman Park. So this isn't a total, because you approve this to join the funds together and look at this area, in no means means that any environmental review has been done at all.
And it could be split later, you're
yes.
saying that?
Oh, absolutely.
A quick question that sort of relates to that. Is that extension of Embarcadero, that's dirt, that is still dedicated street, isn't it? It's just not paved?
Yes, it is. It's right away.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to comment on this, that I think it's wonderful that your two boards work together and combine this, and thank you for thinking that way. That's a good thing.
I think it's wonderful that after 10 years of sitting around, we're finally talking about a boatyard again. I remember sitting in on those meetings 10 years ago.
Ben, you want to make the motion?
I wish I had a little more resources or land to work with, because we're going to be limited in our area. And I would just like to emphasize what both Bruce and Rob said. You will see project-specific permitting action, development permits on each of these projects, should we be able to come up with projects. This is just to take a look at the area and see if we're on the right track on what we're planning to do.
Okay. Betty?
I would move approval of A1.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. And Betty, you want to pull A2?
A2 is a report on the performance of coming back with pros and cons about implementation of the recommendations regarding our mass transit internal, which would be the dial-a-ride and the trolley. And Mr. Hendricks, I don't know if you were able to send me that list today because I haven't been on my email or not.
Actually, Janine did draft a response, and I did forward it to you. I have it in writing. I think Janine does as well. We can go over those items one by one if you prefer.
But I was thinking of just the items under what? Under the North Coast Transit Plan, number 4.
There were a series of recommendations, and I'll let Janine go over the list.
Yeah, there's actually 15 different recommendations in the North Coast Transit Plan, 3 of which are to be initiated by rideshare or the Regional Transit Authority in future years for services on Route 12, different changes to that relating to service to Cal Poly, Cuesta College, and so on. And then another one on vanpooling and carpooling. So those 3 are not related to anything that the city itself would be initiating, but are part of the North Coast plan that was being looked at. The other recommendations are to be, well, actually one other one is not to be initiated pretty much by the city, and that is a consideration of extending service to Cayucas. Mm-hmm. And this was in a recommendation only if there's 100% funding commitment from the county years. But we are still looking at the North Coast Transit Plan had a projected surplus of revenue. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that after this fiscal year we would be looking at what the actual expenditures and revenues were compared with what the projections were to see if we had that supplemental amount and if that would be enough to continue the lunch coverage program. So we're still looking at funds for that.
You would not look to SLOCOG to supplement from the same fund that they currently are?
We could, what the funding pot that we got this from was a supplemental STA allocation in the fiscal year 2006-2007 year. It was a one-time only pot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So in future years, there are other grant funds available, such as the Rural Transit Fund grant, but they are for capital projects only, not operating. And actually, outside of TDA money, all of the grant programs for transportation, for transit specifically, are for capital projects.
Mm-hmm.
We have been notified by the Council of Governments that there is a projection for 07-08 to be increasing the amount of STA from what they were projecting back in April when they approved the TDA claim amounts. So we may see a little bit more coming in for our 07-08 claim. However, we also do have projects such as the generator that are underfunded that, depending on how much money we have, we may want to put towards that to complete that project, or we may also want have some money available for the driver lunch coverage. The other thing we're doing is monitoring for this year what kind of effect the lunch coverage has been having. Is it actually increasing ridership, which is what this whole idea was supposed to be about?
And has that been advertised?
It's been advertised. The riders on the bus have been notified when they call in. They're starting to see it pick up a little bit. Over the summer, it's been a little slow, but we were anticipating that once the school year started, this is really when we would start to notice a difference in whether this was going to have the effect that it was designed to have, because a lot of people were not wanting to ride at the same time as the school kids. We have a lot of different pickups for school kids from early as 7:30 in the morning all the way till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And so once this whole fiscal year is over, we're going to have a better idea of whether this is actually increasing ridership, particularly during those times, or not. The potential downside, if we're not increasing ridership, is we've added hours, we've spent money, we've lost productivity, and we're basically kind of, not I'm going to say throw our money away, but it's not being used as effectively as possible. So we are monitoring that end of it so that we can do a review afterwards to see is it a program that we need to continue, and we also are looking for funding for that in the event that it is something that we want and need to continue.
And I guess I would reiterate that advertising would be key to that being successful. And yeah. So I hope that's part of your monitoring, that you've, you know, repeatedly done that, however is most effective that you know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reason for bringing back the North Coast recommendations is I did remember, and I couldn't bring back the specificity of it, but you did, about the requirement to meet Cayucas' needs. So I'm glad there was that qualification there that they have to participate if we're going
right.
to have to be involved.
The original recommendation that came from them didn't speak to the issue of funding, and so it would come from Morro Bay and RTDA,
mm-hmm.
Which would be a detriment to the services that we provide for our residents in the community. And that's when they came back with the recommendation that it has to be 100% fully funded from the county, because we would be providing service to county residents, and it would need to come from their mm-hmm. TDA money.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't be a draw on the city and what we receive.
I think the whole reason we went through this exercise is because we weren't sure which of these recommendations were either prioritized for
mm-hmm.
us or what we thought was not necessary. A couple of them are already completed, and one's halfway being completed. And so with all this good work, I guess I'm wondering if the rest of the council feels like all of these projects are still worthwhile, and if they need to be prioritized or leave it up to staff to prioritize them.
Well, I should mention within the North Coast Transit Plan, and I believe also in the performance audit, there are target dates for implementation. The North Coast mm-hmm. Plan talks about short range and gives definite time periods, fiscal years for implementation for each of the recommendations. So in a way, they're already listed out as to when these need to be occurring and when we need to start taking them on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other council comments or concerns? Nope.
Will consist of the area within the exterior walls of the dwelling, not including the first 400 feet of the garage space. The garage area in excess of 400 square feet shall be included as part of the square footage. What this means is any single-family residence in the R1 district currently could be approved with an administrative permit, but if that occurs now and someone comes in with an application of over 2,500 square feet, then they would have to obtain a conditional use permit from the Planning Commission, which could be appealed to the City Council. This ordinance requires 4/5 vote under the government code, and it is in effect for 45 days. Unless extended, it'll require a public hearing. So if it does pass within 45 by 4/5 vote, then it will come back to you at your October 22nd meeting with a public hearing at that time to extend it, which can be extended for 10 months and 15 days.
Question?
Yes.
By requiring the conditional use permit, how much extra does this cost?
I talked to our planners about it. I think it was about $700. I think we need to the total permitting fees. We found a fee that we could work from that was somewhere between a minor addition and short of a full use permit. It was somewhere in between. My recollection is somewhere around $700. But we would with prop this item, we would bring a resolution back to adjust that fee.
And also, it's Ordinance 533, not 532.
Okay. The 400 feet on the garage, is that the size of an average two-car garage?
That's the interior dimension, yes.
Okay.
Okay, there was a question, a public comment about the legality of this. Is there any concern with that?
The government code allows you to do it.
Okay. Thank you. My question, I guess, was do we want... We have all these different lot sizes in town. Is there any difference in a house going on a huge lot compared to a 40 by 60 lot? And do we want to differentiate with that or not? I mean, there's some lots in the area we were just looking at.
Right. I think the reason, as I recall the discussion 2 weeks ago, was just to do something and not to get real specific, so it doesn't get real complicated.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, to not make it variable. Because Mr. Pearson, I think, rightly said, well, what about on the smaller lot? This should be even a smaller figure,
mm-hmm.
like maybe, you know, 2,000.
Okay.
So I don't know how many people would make application in, you know, the next 5 weeks, if it's that big of a deal or not.
Okay. If nobody else has a concern with that, it's not a problem. I just thought I'd ask.
Yeah.
Because it was asked of me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, I'd like to put a couple of photos on the overhead. If I could enlist maybe Rob's help. I have a thought-provoking article coming out in the Bay News, I hope, on Wednesday. And it refers to this piece of development on Greenwood Avenue in North Morro Bay. They have what I would call substandard lots up there, and they've had them historically, so they're not the 6,000-square-foot house. This is the house at the top, when you turn around, you face the neighborhood, the existing neighborhood, and Greenwood is all... It's not completely single-story because there have been a couple of other kind of remodels. In fact, you can see one to the left of that turret up there. This is actually a beautiful home, wrong neighborhood. You know, I talked to the lady across the street, and she says, oh, but it'll raise all of our property values. But if you look at Greenwood, not until they're all built up looking like this, which then obviously changes the face of the neighborhood and the town. This went up with no public review in this neighborhood. It replaced an 868-square-foot existing home, and some of those homes need replacing, but I'm not sure if they need replacing with a 2,500-square-foot home on a 500-square-foot, with a 500-square-foot garage, which, by the way, is behind the house. You have to drive in and around and behind the house to get to it. Neighbors were noticed, I believe, for 100 feet around this thing. But the thing is, basically, this is a suggested kind of moment to consider, to think a little bit, and it doesn't really stop any kind of building except for building of larger projects. And I think I said at the last meeting that was only 10 of the about 40 or so in the last year. And I think in light of a lot of the public unrest we have right now and the ongoing workshops and the work of our staff, actually, I mean...
is that discretion that the planning commissioners have that staff doesn't have, where they can say, yes, it fits in the box, but is it appropriate? And it's not that we're telling them that you can have certain architecture or you can do certain guideline standards, but we're saying consider your surroundings and let's pull that in. And so I think that's why we're just stopping for this moment and saying, in light of the work that staff's doing, mm-hmm. let's wait for that work.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right.
Madam Mayor, this is ordinance number 533, an interim ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay, California, temporarily modifying the development review for parcels in the R1 districts zone that exceed 2,500 square feet, pending completion of studies and the preparation of an update to the city's zoning code.
Thank you. All right, item C2, directional signage implementation program. Bruce, at last. Hooray.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a proposal that we've been working on for quite some time. I just wanted to point out this is the follow-up to the work on the directional signage program. I could pass, if you like, these around to the council. I could put them up. Those are the signage materials for the new gateway signs. We have preliminary approval for a new gateway sign on Highway 1 and on Highway 41. northbound and westbound, respectively. We have the application for the final permits submitted to review. We would change copy on the southerly gateway sign at Yerba Buena. And then we've identified a number of other locations where we would install, in addition to the gateway signs, directional signs and entryway signs, and some locational signs. I'd also like to point out that SLOCOC staff originally indicated that the money, grant funds were available to cover this, and the last time I talked to them, they indicated that the gateway signs were covered, but we'll have to make a case to link the directional signs to the interpretive signage program that we have on the Embarcadero, and then that we will have on the Harbor Walk project. And there's kind of a competitive application process. So I just want to point out in your report, I indicated that we could deprogram those funds, but we would feel more comfortable if we didn't deprogram until we had the grant funding secured. So I'd still like to have kind of a placeholder in there in the event that I know we're going to get, they've indicated we're going to get the gateway signs, but some of the other signage may be a little bit more competitive. Yeah, so we don't have that yet. So, I've also on the I've worked and Ed Biagini may care to comment on this. The promotions committee identified a parking lot identification sign that's also in your book. It's on the front sleeve of that cover. Actually, I could put it on the overhead if that might help. There it is. Yeah, it's to your left. That's it.
Janice.
Right. That yeah. Those.
Yeah.
And the sign that Councilmember DeMera's holding up, is it would be the middle one on the lower part. So the parking lots would be identified with that, and then we could perhaps have some directional signs trying to get folks over there. You may
the middle one on the lower, this one here?
Right.
Okay.
May I say that I was kind of stunned at the choice. The only one there that shows me a direction to a parking lot is the one with the arrow. And that's what these signs are for. They're not to tell me that a thing that obviously looks like a parking lot is a parking lot.
These signs would identify the lot, and the copy on our directional signs would say Embarcadero Parking with an arrow.
So this is just going to be the sign that's at the lot.
That identifies the parking areas. There could be supplemental ones located along the way, but the locational directional signs.
Mr. Ambo, why do I need a sign at a parking lot that says it's a parking lot when what I really need, and I really wanted to approve tonight, were some little P signs with arrows that say go down this way and you'll find a parking lot.
We could do that. I just share with you that there is a universal parking symbol.
Yes.
When I talked to our sign designer, they indicated they'd rather not even use that. I mean, use the program that we've got, because it presents a design issue with the signage design that we have approved versus the sign design that these folks work with. We're comfortable taking any direction from council. We've been messing around with this for about 2 or 3 years.
We're going to have signs that are directional to where parking
right.
is.
Right, and they'll say the boat launch, the Embarcadero parking, and okay. The idea, if you remember from your last work study session we had on the parking management plan, is to kind of, they're working on a number of other things. The other important thing they're working on is that map that we could use on the webpage mm-hmm. to help the city and the chamber and any of the visitors to the community find out where these areas are. Those symbols would also be helpful to read on the map as parking areas.
Okay.
So.
Do we want to hear why the color was chosen, or do we want to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Briefly. We're on a schedule, and we're 10 minutes late now.
I didn't start this.
Good evening, Ed Biagini. Real quick, forget the color.
Okay.
It should be consistent with whatever the signage program with the rest of the city is.
Right.
Answer Melody's question real quick. The reason that you need to have the parking lot identified is because we're going to be putting maps out, both in print and on the website, that have little P's on them that'll be consistent in color with the P's at the parking lots. So that'll tell the traveler when he downloads the map, comes to town, oops, there's the lot, I'm here. That he saw on the map, and that's the reason for
well
it.
Well done. Thank you.
Well, can I just ask a question? Is there, you're reckoning a non-universal
parking sign, right?
Actually, the one that we actually show in our maps and stuff doesn't have the little car on it, because we didn't want to confuse it with say RV parking, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things.
But that
was just the symbol of the P, which was kind of a universal thing.
I think my question is: you're recommending we not use the universal sign, that we use a unique sign?
I don't know, Bruce. I'm not familiar with what the actual universal P looks like, but I think it's probably a P.
I can tell you this: there's a book of universal signs that's pretty lengthy. And there's a lot of variations.
If we were to direct you to pick a universal sign in a color and design that's consistent with our other directional signs, you could do that, right?
Yes, we could. I would coordinate it with the promotions committee. These are the folks that did the work on that. I wasn't involved.
And you could do that,
I'd be happy to work with them in any way that pulled
out. Madam Mayor, I believe that Pacific Telephone Company has a bunch of signs with a P on them that they're not using anymore now that they've merged. Maybe we could get those.
Okay. Any other comments or questions on this matter?
Just one. On these, Bruce, where underneath it you have these little sliders that go in that advertises upcoming events. I guess they would have to be made by these same people. So if we want to have an avocado and margarita festival sign, or if we want to have a car show sign, or a harbor festival sign, we would want to get those pre-done, I guess.
Yeah, we'd have to look at some modifying the design. Yeah, if they were the same materials, that'd be great. We'd have to look at that. We'd probably have to get them fabricated from the same manufacturer, so that that all look like they were from the same family and designs.
I like the idea of being able to advertise upcoming events like that.
Okay. Any other comments?
Mr. Amba, we already approved a certain amount of money. Is that right? And certain sizes, and that's what you're going to be getting is those particular sizes?
Right, right.
But it's not costing us anything, right? It's 50. Not coming out of our general fund. It's
No. Even under the former scenario, that was grant funds. There's just better grant funds that we want to go for.
Okay. Can I hear a motion?
I so move.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. Moving on. Item D1, review of results for request for proposals on lease site located 833 Embarcadero, and authorization for Brooke Caldwell and Doug Redican to apply for development permits on the lease site. Rick.
Yep. Good evening again, Madam Mayor and Council. The subject of this agenda item is the future redevelopment of lease sites 87W, 88W, known as the Outrigger Restaurant, currently leased to Violet League until April 2010. This summer, the city requested proposals from all interested parties to submit plans for redevelopment of these lease sites. We received three qualified proposals, one from Violet League, which is the proposal that has been working through the local review process of concept level approval. That proposal from Violet League also included a note that she was willing to amend the proposal if the existing project that had been described and approved at concept level, there was an indication that she was willing to change it to reduce the second floor. And I just want to make that note to you. The other two proposals were received from a partnership of Doug Redican and Bert Caldwell. Doug Redican was the developer of Rose's Landing, and which is an adjacent or a proposal with the motel rooms on the second floor, was 74.34. So the highest scoring proposal was the Redican Caldwell partnership with the conference rooms on the second floor. The recommended process at this point is that the City Council authorize, or that we be authorized to sign the consent landlord form that would allow Redican Caldwell partnership to apply for development permits and approvals at the Planning Department, Planning Division, the city. They would be given 12 months to complete that process to concept level approval at the City Council. If they can complete that concept level approval at the City Council within 12 months, within as allowed for in the RFP, as we described in the RFP, and also described in our harbor lease management policy, the city staff would then be authorized to negotiate a lease and bring that back to council for your approval sometime in the future. So at this step, I want to emphasize tonight, what we're recommending is a fairly simple thing, that the Redicom-Caldwell partnership be authorized to apply for development permits and be encouraged to attempt to complete that process within 12 months. So in conclusion, I'm going to grab my other sheet here, pardon me. We recommend tonight that the City Council adopt Resolution 4607, designating the Caldwell Redicom Proposal Number 1, which is the one with the convention rooms on the second floor, as primary proposer in the LS 8788-87W88 RFP, authorizing the partnership to apply for development permits on the site and designating Mrs. Leek as secondary proposer. Should Caldwell Redicom fail to obtain concept-level approval of their proposals from the City Council by September 24th, 2008. I'd like to answer your questions now, but I just realized reading that I left out an important fact in describing the proposal that Redicom Caldwell, and probably the reason, one of the main reasons it was scored highest, was they did have the opportunity to take the site that they lease now from the city, lease site 8686W, known as the Fishbowl previously, Fishbowl Restaurant, now converted to another restaurant, and propose they redevelopment the site that was out to RFP with that. So they did have an opportunity to combine those two sites, and that did apparently allow for some benefits and some additional public benefits as understood by the city's internal review panel. Can I answer any questions for you?
Any questions for Rick?
Mr. Augard, I have one. It has to do with the league proposal. I feel like I've seen two different drawings for this proposal. Is one been more favored than the other, or is one in place? Is that what you were saying? If the second floor is reduced in size, that I'm looking at one of these pictures and not the other? And I'm specifically looking at... well, they don't have page numbers. But it's the outer one that looks really long and angular, and then the one with the sweeping roof line. I didn't know which one we were speaking to.
I know you received a correspondence from Kathy Novak that had two color renderings attached, and I presume that may be what you're describing. That was not in the agenda packet.
One of them is.
So I believe that you're looking at a proposal that is the same. It was the proposal that's working through the concept level planning process at the city is very close to where we would be, or if not already, it's quite a ways along in the planning and approval process.
Okay, and both proposers are here in the audience, so
great.
If you have questions you'd like to ask specifically, we can have them come up. If we don't have to. So would you like to have them up? Are there questions for
you? Yeah, I'd love to know about these.
All right, you have questions for staff first, Melody?
I have a question.
Okay, let's go with staff, and then we'll bring them up.
Rick, which one of the proposals yields the most boat slips? I've had a lot of people talking to me about boat slips.
It's somewhat difficult to answer that because the Redicom-Caldwell proposal is very conceptual. It has not started design review at all. And it did not, to me, indicate any firm plans, specific plans for slip development. I think that they do intend to develop slips there, but they're shown sort of schematically. Now, the outrigger concept that Ms. League submitted does include a side tie that would be a nice, you know, slip side tie there in front of their building. I hope I'm right. Recall that correctly.
I would just point out that if you recall from the Ken Scott project, that project did not have any water.
But I didn't see on the other two plans.
So what you're reviewing when you ask that question is the combined scoring sheets from the three
That's correct.
Folks who scored
I'm sorry.
It.
No, that's okay. And we combined their comments, so that's no one individual that you see there. That's a combination of the notes that were made by the scoring folks. And I will go into dangerous ground here and reflect. I think I did not do the scoring, but I think there was a feeling that it was a much more complex project with potentially more advantages. There schematically did show slips, more slips, in the convention facilities, but they also reflected many concerns, too. So it was potentially a higher risk and higher reward project, I think was the perception. But again, I'm coloring a little bit. The objective facts are that they scored this proposal higher.
Okay, I want to correct something that people have been saying. It's a conference center.
What did I say?
Convention. Convention brings a whole new, Las Vegas.
Yeah.
We're not talking about that kind of stuff. We're talking conferences.
I apologize.
Medical, teachers.
I must
different concept. Okay. All right. So we have some questions for the applicants. Betty, for the league. Kathy, is that you representing? Bye.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Kathy Novak. There was two proposals submitted by Via League. The number one proposal is the one that you see the color photo simulations of. Yes, there was a second alternative proposal that was also submitted with the overall application. At this time, Violet's proposal basically is the number one proposal. Yes, because that's already received Planning Commission approval and concept plan.
Do both of these offer the same amount of public open space?
Basically, yes.
And one of them has the same amount of second story as the other one?
No. The second alternative has less upstairs than the first one. The first proposal has 6 hotel units upstairs, and the other proposal only calls for a portion of the second floor, which would be a part of a restaurant.
Okay. Thanks.
Anybody else have questions for Kathy?
No, then I would ask a question, Mr.
Thank you.
Caldwell.
Okay, Mr. Caldwell, or Mr. Redigan, whoever's speaking for you.
Good evening. Doug Redigan speaking for Burke Caldwell.
Since your plan is not as far along as the other plan is, do you have an idea of how much open space is available?
Well,
between the
existing
buildings?
Site, basically, if you... I don't have the photos, and the Mike Peachy did of MBW. I think shows it shows. There's actually renderings on the site that shows what it looks like presently, and what we proposed to put on that site. And the open space would be
30%
of the according to the waterfront plan.
And do you know how that compares to what's available right now on that site?
Actually, height-wise on those two sites combined, from those renderings, we've seen reducing the height. And on the width, on the view quarter, it's exactly, I believe, what it is today.
So and that would be my concern, is the open space down on the main level that's outside the building is, you're saying, the same amount that's currently available?
Exactly.
Okay. And I think that's what you're leaving, and maybe I should go back and ask Ms. Novak if that's the same amount also. I think that it is. So I'm just trying to figure out if there's lost open space.
There's the same amount of open space on the project as there is now. Actually, let me clarify. In the current lease site, there's a set of stairs and there's a big electrical panel in the middle of the project right now. Mm-hmm. That will be gone, so that whole entire area can be utilized, mm-hmm, rather than just a portion of it right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Redigan and Caldwell?
I think for Mr. Redigan.
Okay.
We got these colorful perspective drawings.
You can tell I don't do this very often.
Yes. I thought you did it every day, actually. you gave us these drawings, and I know that they're very conceptual, but I think at this point we all would probably wonder how close to a real idea is all of this color and all of these kind of variations of setbacks and such and roof lines. How close is it, do you think, to what you'll deliver to us in a year from now?
Well, I think it's very close. Mike Peachy did the planning drawings, and we just hired Steve Puglisi recently, who's been before you numerous times on the Anderson Project and the Roses Landing Project.
Right.
It's your turn.
This one has given me more trouble than any of the others because I think both concepts are good. I think that the playing field, while almost level, isn't completely level because there's more opportunity with the two leases to do things, and so that makes it very, very difficult to compare them. And I know that there's been a lot of tradition involved in this. So it's with difficulty that I probably will go with staff's recommendation, but that's not easy at this point.
Okay. Betty?
I really like this design of the Redikins. I also really like this alternative on the Leagues. I think that's real creative. It's different, and it's not as bulky as the original, which is almost a turnoff. I'm real concerned about all our new projects having to be two-story, having to be large so they can make some kind of return. So in a sense, Ms. League has the advantage in that she's there and can move ahead a little better. If I could talk her into the alternative one rather than the bulky-looking one, won't bring in the income. But I'm real concerned we're losing our smaller businesses on the mom-and-pops. I know that's one of the goals of the harbor plan, is that we combine lots and make bigger projects. And certainly the Marina Square has done a nice job with that. But when it comes to the whale's tail, I'm not going to want to see that thing go two-story and huge. I mean, it's small, it's quaint, it is Morro Bay, right next to that little park, right next to Giovanni's. So to go to this larger, massive building is where my concern is. My open space is, and the visual effect, I think, is my number one priority down there. They're both saying that they're keeping the same amount of open space, so that I can't judge on that. So my preference is alternative number one for the Leagues.
I'll be supporting staff's recommendation on the Caldwell Redikin project.
I'm going to support staff's recommendation, but I really don't know how you, Redikin and Caldwell, are actually going to make it work for themselves. It seems like a gift to the city if they can pull it off, and you have a really hard road to go down to get this pulled off in a year. I think in terms of what Ms. Lindholz is saying about bulk and scale, I went down there last night and just simply walked around the building, walked across, looked at it. There is bulk and scale in this project already. So anything, if we did one or two or three or four, any of these projects, isn't reducing the bulk and scale, but it's what do they do with that bulk and scale. So I would be supporting staff's recommendation.
Okay, well, I too find this, it is difficult, and I do empathize, and that, whether you believe it or not, I do empathize with the tradition that is down there. However, I have to think about our community's future, and our future is to generate more revenue year-round, and a conference center is a wonderful tool to do that. We have tried to achieve that at the Brannigan's site, and it simply doesn't pencil out for someone else to do that, and we can't afford to do it ourselves. So it is a very difficult decision, but again, I'm here because I'm supposed to be looking out for the good of the entire community, and that means looking for the revenue stream for the entire community. And I think that the conference center project has a greater impact in that respect. So I'm going to go with staff's recommendation as well.
Then I would have a question for those of you that are going to do that, and that is, how are you going to justify the parking issue that still is not resolved with that particular project? I think that needs to be addressed.
And it will be. It will be.
But it's not right now. My other point is,
and you couldn't,
I agree that money is a big concern, but on the Embarcadero, I think visual impact becomes real important. And it's already a moneymaker. You're looking for increased revenue. We've heard of at least two other projects just tonight where people are thinking about other kinds of conference centers. So, can the city support several conference centers? And not that we...
popular and attractive area. So I really do think it could be a great benefit to the community. I think the parking, we are going to have to be creative about it, but I think there are easy ways to do that with providing transportation to the parking as part of the event. So,
are we assuming that the New Futures Committee that's working on the power plant property will not be doing some kind of conference and or convention center?
I don't know, and I don't know how long that would take. It would be lovely, but who knows? I mean, we don't even know if they're going to give that property up. So this is something we'll know in a year. So anybody want to make a motion?
I'd move approval of resolution number 4607.
Second. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, 4-1, Betty opposed. Okay, we got an... all right, let's go to things that are more urgent. D3, let's start with that one.
Dylan's here for one of them.
Okay.
Oh, that's where we're going.
This is the one. And this is authorization to conduct a space needs assessment for corporate yard and wastewater treatment plant expansion. Dylan?
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Pleasure to be here tonight with you. Real quick, just kind of a rundown of what we're doing, what we're trying to do with the space needs, and then a couple of clarifications that I wish Susan was here tonight, but she slipped out already, that she asked me to make. What we're looking at is we have the corporate yard, which is immediately adjacent to the wastewater treatment plant. It has been a kind of a good functional facility and is well used by city staff. As we've got a couple of different sort of balls up in the air right now in regards to one, probably the biggest one is the wastewater treatment plant upgrade project. They're adding a facility there, which would be the oxidation ditch, and they would need to site that. There's also a decant facility that if we get into the eventuality that we're running the desalinization plant more often or more frequently, we will need to construct a decant facility. Additionally, the collections division or group is currently housed on the wastewater treatment plant site. The building that they're housed in is literally falling in around them, and so we need to find them a spot to build a new facility to house their equipment. So there's a number of things. There's some others out there also, transit potentially purchasing a fourth trolley, and some other sort of space needs. So what we decided to do was commission a study to take a look at not only the corporate yard, but also the wastewater treatment plant site, the concrete plant, which is a jointly owned parcel between Morro Bay Cayucas and then kind of the adjacent parcels in that area. So we're hiring potentially, if approved, RRM to come in and to look at that area, look at that vicinity, and sort of show us how all the parts could fit together in the most logical fashion. We've also asked them to look at one facility off-site, and in our mind that was possibly the Navy Yard on Panorama that we would have them look at. If we can't fit it all in the yard, we would maybe site something in that area. So what we've requested in the staff report is that we, and this is where Susan caught up with me and, you know, straightened me out. But apparently the way these projects work, I was kind of talked, Bruce Keough, because he has such a big piece in this, there's the collection system and then there's the water system that has a capital project. for the decamp facility. So I'm taking funds from three sources effectively in order to fund this. And then this would become a work product that would go to the general fund and be used by the general fund, which would be the study. So what we're asking to do is to take $33,000 from sewer reserves, allocate them for this project. There's a water capital project, which is the decant facility that has $440,000 in it that we would use a portion of that for to come up with a total of $49,700 to do this study. And the end product of the study would be pretty much a map with an assessment of what everybody, all the existing and future users' needs are for this facility and how to logically lay them out so that we can maximize the use of the space. So that's, I think, it in a nutshell. And if you have any questions, be happy to answer them.
The only thing I'd like to add is we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but we wouldn't recommend the Navy site at this time. We're really just talking the courtyard. We don't control that land, and it's not in the contract, and we didn't address it. So I just want to clarify that.
Okay. I'm sorry. I have to apologize. I was going to address this earlier and check with the city attorney and everything, and I didn't. But I think I am going to step down for this. RRM, my brother, used to be an employee. He is now a partner.
Really limited number of parcels in town that could accommodate that.
And a little bit farther, the Navy site is a location that may possibly be had for little or no money if it's used for public benefit purposes. So that's, you know, we didn't look at other ones because we felt like if we were going to have to purchase land, that just wasn't in the cards. So that's why that was the one to look at it as an alternative.
But it really, for the sake of the study, it's we don't need a specific off-site alternative. Mm-hmm. What we really need to do is sort of pull everybody together, assess what the needs are, and then that'll give us a roadmap for marching forward, in which case we would start looking if we had to go off-site, if we couldn't make it fit all on the immediately adjacent properties, then we'd have to start looking and kicking that around. But that's that would be after we get through the study process.
And then I just have one other question, and that is, or maybe it's more an opinion, I'm concerned that we would look at using the concrete plant site simply because that's such a highly used facility for the whole coastal construction area.
Agreed. And being a public works type, I love a concrete plant. I'm probably getting more excited about it than anybody else here would. The only reason we included that is that is a jointly owned facility, mm-hmm. and the JPS specifies and kind of eyes that area for future expansion. So we felt that it wouldn't be fair. What we're going to try to do is Bruce Keough is going to take this to the JPA, and hopefully this money that's allocated out of the sewer reserves will be split further down between the collections and then the JPA. And so he's going to take that to the JPA and have them actually help fund the study to site the facilities.
And preliminary staff had that same concerns about the cement, but when that doesn't mean it couldn't be relocated to take the best use of that property, because where the cement factory or whatever it is right now is kind of right in the middle. You know, we've got land on the other side of it and both sides. So that's part of this would be
moving
correct.
It not
only is it important to the economy of the city, but also it's even a revenue generator for the city because
yes.
it's a lease site. So the consultant will take all that in, and it might be that it can be moved around.
Thank you.
Okay, Rick.
I would have liked to have seen the map that we looked at the other day included in this because it really really was helpful in understanding not only what your situation currently is, but some of the options to correct it.
Yeah, and we've tried really not to impose too much and let kind of RRM have some free rein. There's a lot. Everybody I talked to at the city has kind of a different concept of what they would like to see and what space. Really where we're at is the yard's too tight, and we need to look at how we can reconfigure, reuse that so that we can find a home for everybody.
Any other questions before I go ahead? Dylan, I'm wondering, is there a legal reason why we need to hire an outside person to do a space needs assessment?
I would say that there's nothing, and Rob can jump in if I'm wrong. I don't think there's anything that would preclude staff from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Really, the constraint that we run into, at least for me, one of the driving issues is the collections building. I wouldn't be comfortable as an engineer saying that building will be there in a year. It's in that poor of a condition. And so That being said, we really want to move on this quickly, and so there's just limited staff time available. So if we took it in-house and said we're just going to tackle this ourselves, while I'm confident that we have the technical capability to do that, that would basically delay the process fairly significantly, and we felt it was worth kind of pressing ahead with all speed.
Yeah. I simply ask that question, too, because there's so much participation by the city in the RRM plan. So I thought, why couldn't we just do it?
Our original proposal for this from RRM was near 80,000. And what we said is, hey, let's take duplication of effort out. And we actually pared it down to where we're at now. So we sort of said, using the interns that we have on staff, using some limited staff time, here's what we can do. And then they're taking our work product and rolling it out and up.
So in other words, because you did that negotiation offer to do that work, they reduced the price by half.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
I guess just this is the cheapest. Well, like you didn't go out to bid on this project.
No, we didn't go out to bid. We actually sort of talked directly with RRM. We might be able to get, if we went through the competitive bid process, we might be able to get somewhat cheaper. I don't think we get substantially cheaper just because of the nature of the work product. There's, you know, a certain amount of time to do the work, and at a reasonable billing rate, you're going to be somewhere in this ballpark. The reason we went directly with RRM is we've worked with them on some other master planning projects, and we felt that they would be able to sort of quickly and efficiently get us to where we wanted to go. The contract we're proposing with them would have an end date somewhere early next year, so we really want to sort of bang this out and rip through it as quickly as we can.
I suggest that we not do a sliding scale fee, but go to the flat fee. I show a survey of the other cities in the county. All are at flat fees. Paso Robles had kind of an interesting one, and maybe I misunderstood what the woman said, but she says it's a $200 flat fee for the non-applicant if they're not appealing their own project, if it's someone that's not appealing their own project. And the other one, she said, it was just attached to their fees. Now, whether that's $200 or more, I don't know. So I apologize for not following through on that detail, but I think it's pretty obvious what the state of it is in the county. And so I did not come up with a specific amount. I thought that we could do that, assuming that you're willing to go with a flat fee.
Okay. Comments? Questions?
How about $250? It sort of goes in the middle. About 264. Yeah, 250.
Is that? Madam Mayor, may I comment for just a second on this before you render a decision?
Okay.
I just wanted to point out that this is no reflection on Councilmember Winholz, but this is an example of the problems that we have with that policy paragraph about setting future agenda items. Because here is an example where a council member has prepared a report for the council based upon the fact that there was not majority support for placing an item, because if there was majority support, a staff report would be required. And yet where we are now is we're now contemplating the policy decision based upon this, even though it was never placed on the agenda by the council, so to speak. It was placed by two people. I don't have any objection to the substance of the item. What I'm just trying to point out is the problem we have with this process that keeps coming up, and I just wanted to make mention of it so you could see it at this end as opposed to the other end.
What we should be doing is now saying, okay, we would like this to be
direct staff to come back with
this. Correct. That's correct.
What the policy says is the council will take no action on the substance of the matter at this second review unless there is adequate public notice and information is provided for the council to make an informed decision. So if you feel there's been adequate public notice as to the amount of the fee, and you have set a flat fee but you haven't said what, and even if you do that, there'd have to be a change in the master fee schedule, so it would come back. What you have to decide is whether you've got enough informed information from staff into what the implications are of this policy decision, or whether you needed to come back for another report from staff.
And I think that's all fine and good. I think based on the fact that this came out of a previous study, makes me feel like I'm informed enough. I understand not to make the decision tonight. We don't even know what the fee is, but to recommend to staff that we do the flat fee, whether or not we recommend an amount or not.
Okay. Well, we could recommend that we would like staff to consider a flat fee of $250 and have them come back with why that wouldn't work or if it's okay.
Yeah.
How's that? Okay. Would you like to make that motion?
Well, I'll do it if you want.
Sure,
I move we direct staff to come back with an ordinance changing our appeal fees to a flat fee in the neighborhood of $250.
I would second that.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay, that was easy. All right. D4. Let's go to that one. That's been continued several times, too. This one I brought up. And this is about our public comment policy. And it works well, and we've gotten good cooperation, tonight being a perfect example where people understood that we had to shorten the time for them to speak. There was a little bit of disappointment at that, but not bad. What this would do would just make it kind of official. My suggested public comment speaker request is sort of a combination of what LAFCO uses and what City of San Luis uses and what I thought would be appropriate for our meetings, just to, when we do have an item that brings a lot of public comment, that we have some control over, you know, I don't have to count heads, I'll have cards in front of me and say, okay, we have 20 people that want to speak on this, we have 40 minutes, you each get 2 minutes. That's the purpose behind it. It's just a matter of making things a little bit more official and organized, and it's entirely up to the rest of you whether you think that that would be helpful or not. I'm not married to this idea, but I thought it was worth considering.
Madam Mayor, if I could start, yes. I think I was one of the people a couple of years ago that suggested we have this in our arsenal, because we have had public hearings in time past where it just people kept getting up and we didn't know who was going to talk, who wasn't, and it turned out the thing took up all of the time in the evening because we didn't know how many were going to be talking. So I think that when you know you're going to have a lot of people so you can plan the evening, something like your suggestion works pretty well. I don't like some of the others, but I think this one I could support. And just have it
again, that would be what the chair would say is, you know, okay, we need to have all the cards for people that want to speak now. And if there's time still, you know, if some of these comments aren't quite so long as we expect, then maybe we can bring others up. But we're going to start with this group and just have a time. Okay, this is now we're going to collect these and that's it.
And then, just to clarify, you're saying that we don't have to do these every time, but
no,
at your discretion.
No, I wouldn't want to do them every time.
Whatever mayor.
Yeah, if there's two or three people, I don't want to have speaker cards. But when we get an issue like tonight where we had 17 people, that would be helpful just to not have to point and count heads.
I think the thing that's helpful about it, or could be, and I don't know that I see it on here, but is to check which side of the issue you're on. So you could alternate.
I didn't put that in, but if you would like that included, we could do that. Some of them do ask that if they're in favor or opposed to the item. So, Melanie?
Yeah, I think that this is something that's fairly unnecessary. It was proven tonight. I thought tonight would prove that it was necessary. But actually, I looked at the agenda. I couldn't believe how many things we were going to try to do tonight, plus a controversial issue. And it worked well, actually, and I think with one of the more vocal crowds that we've had in the room lately. And in my 3 years, I think we've had three nights where we had a lot of people wanting to do some talking. And so this wouldn't happen that often. I also wondered what you meant, and this might have been an offhand comment, but the last five words of your report here, 10 or more citizens wish to speak on a specific issue or on a regular basis.
I was talking about when we would use them, and I probably didn't phrase it well.
Okay, so kind of scratch that. And then the other thing that I was objection to, is this note on the guidelines to not bring large posters to the speaker podium. Words like large don't do a lot for me, because I wonder, you know, what do we mean by large? But I think I'm imagining Del Mar school kids here, how they roll it out, no smoking on the beaches, and friends of the library come with their big posters, or the Dahlia people. And I don't know, we're just a small town. We don't have big meetings. There's just like nobody here right now. And when we have a big vocal crowd like we did tonight, I think it was handled the way it should be handled, where we count heads and we divide up the time.
Well, Madam Mayor? What this does is it puts the rules in front of everybody, too, for a large hearing, so that they know, okay, we may have to divide the time and shorten it, and it's not just something that we have to explain to them up front. But, again, that's, you know, comments are fine. Bill?
If I may comment, I think that Melody's point is well taken, but I think that's because the crowd is starting to be familiar with the idea that if there's a lot of people, they're going to get less time. Because where we got into trouble and where I started advocating these things is where you had 20 people that wanted to speak and they each got 3 minutes. And all of a sudden your public comment period for whatever item it was is, you know, you're looking at an hour of talk plus, you know, people wandering up from their chair when it's their turn, and so you add another 10 seconds to each one of those, and pretty soon you're an hour and a half, 2 hours of speaking, and that's where we had problems, because now everybody's accustomed to lining up over against the wall, and that was a great educational thing for all of us, and we've several times now been able to say, we got a lot of you, you get 2 minutes, and nobody's lynched anybody, and it's all worked very well. So, you know, there's not as much need for the speaker slips, but I've also seen these things used where there's like only one or two people, and it gives the chair the opportunity to say to the person by name, okay, this is our public comment period, Mr. Smith or whomever, it's your turn, and it's, you know who it is. You don't have to stop and say, wait a minute, I didn't get your name, you know, because your clerk's got the correct spelling of the name, and that's always a help, too.
Rick?
I don't think we need them. Yeah.
You're not the one that has to tell people they can only talk for 2 minutes.
Well, and you do that very well, and I think you should just continue on with that.
Oh, well, so much for that.
Well, since I brought it up, I'm going to move that we adopt this for issues that have more than 10 speakers.
You would direct staff to come back with a change to your policies and procedures manual implementing a speaker slip.
Policy and procedure manual has that in it. Would be the design.
No, we actually took it out. We took it out. You remember when it came forward, you wanted it in there, but we took it out from the start, so it has not been in there.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to try the motion. I would move that we ask staff to bring back a speaker slip addition to our public comment policy.
And I would second that if we could add a for or against column on the piece
of
paper.
I'm happy with that. Okay, any more?
We'll have to do that every 2 years. What it also required you to do is to pass a specific policy regarding the reimbursement for travel and expenses for elected and appointed officials. We currently have one that's in place that, in all intents and purposes, probably complied with it. But most cities for the past year have been passing one that's been approved by the League of Cities. And added a few. So instead of going back and amending our current policy, I just started from scratch and put one in there. And it obviously had a few things that weren't in there, and one of them that sticks to my mind is the one about hotels and getting the group rate, and if you can't get the group rate, that's all you're entitled to. You can't have more in expense than the group rate for a hotel. Another one was that if you're going to drive. Some people don't like to fly, and if you were going to drive to a conference and the flight is cheaper, you only get the amount of the flight. You don't get the amount of your travel reimbursement for cars anymore, and that was not specific. But actually, what the policy has to say is the language in it is it limits 1, 2, 3, 4 limits reimbursements to actual and necessary expenses. And so the policy is a pretty standard policy. I'm available to answer any questions. You can certainly add any expenses that you feel are necessary and actual to your expenses that are not listed in the eligible expenses. It's pretty much standard form that we're complying with the law with.
Question on the thing about the flight and everything. What if your flight and then your taxi, does that get added to the flight amount to compare to your driving?
Madam Mayor, what I'd prefer to do with this, and I know Rob put this together for your consideration, but I don't think any, for instance, any of the department heads have seen it or anything, and it might be good to roll it by all of them to see what issues arise, and then we could bring you a more finely tuned document. It may not result in any changes, but any concerns that you have in contemplating it, we could bring it back with a resolution for adoption.
Well, it just applies to elected officials. Doesn't apply to the department heads.
Oh, it doesn't? So we'll have our own policy?
Your policy is still the old archaic one that I believe Susan wants to bring that back.
Well, I thought this would apply.
No. It could be the exact way, same one, but there's other issues that she wanted to deal with separately from an employment standpoint that might be different than elected officials or appointed officials.
Well, so back to my question, do they consider things like that? Like, okay, if you fly, then you have to have a taxi from the airport to the hotel. Do they compare, add that in with comparing with the driving?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Question on this. Is this something that applies to state officials as well, or is this something else they've shoved down local government's throat? I envision state elected officials renting a limousine to get to the airport, but that's another story.
I believe 1-2-3 formerly was to local officials, but I don't.
That figures.
I'm not sure, though.
Okay.
I have one question. Yeah. Sorry. In light of Mr. Hendricks' comment, then, and because of the subject title, then when it says appointed officials, are you speaking specifically of the Planning Commission?
Yes.
Or any
yes. 1-2-3-4, which is different, which did not apply to any of the department. They're only applied to elected officials and appointed officials that received compensation as an appointed official.
So therefore, promotions and rec and parks would not, because
right.
They're not compensated.
Exactly. So they didn't have to go through the ethics training. You can add them on your own.
Mm-hmm.
It said specifically the 8-1-2-3-4 says it specifically includes these, the ones that get compensation,
mm-hmm.
Or you could add the rest of them on if the local agency determined that. And we did not. All we did was go with the minimal of City Council and Planning Commission.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah, on the expenses not eligible for reimbursement, number one says the personal portion of any trip. And I think that's a pretty broad category. But would that include things like, say, babysitting or cat sitting? Or I mean, I pay to have my cats taken care of sometimes.
Unless you specifically add those would not be actual and necessary expenses. But you could certainly add that as one of the items, and I would specifically put that in as a reimbursable expense if you want to go to that length.
And that segues directly into what I was going to comment on and why you got the little handout I just gave you. And I want to make this very, very clear in what I'm saying. I do this job, and I got into this job only as public service, and I knew I was never going to get compensated enough for the time that I put in or demand it or anything of the kind. It's a consideration, and it's something that it's difficult for me to pay that kind of money. And yet I certainly don't want to say, no, I'm not going to go to Washington or I'm not going to go to Sacramento. I think that's part of my job, and I signed on for it. So I'm going to do it whether this is, you know, agreed to or not. But what I was thinking of was, in our discretionary funds, if we allowed the council people a certain portion of those to be used towards these kind of expenses on the production of receipts that would be filed and everything else, so they could be used or not as needed. And that's the other item that I would like you to at least consider. And again, I'll go entirely by what everyone says. I'm not expecting this, but I wanted people to be aware that there is a pretty great financial burden that each of us bears when we go out of town for the city.
Were you considering putting a cap on that?
We could put a cap on it, certainly. Yeah.
It's not a cap. Your discretionary funds. Right?
Well, no, but I think that's a good idea. Yeah, absolutely, they should, and usually they're used for helping city organizations or something else. So yes, I think maybe a cap of $300 a year or something like that. So it's not going to pay for everything, perhaps, that we might incur, but it's at least helps.
So what category would you put that under? Because I don't want to call it like just taking care of dogs, because you mentioned like elder care,
right?
baby city. I mean, what category do all those things fall under?
It sounds like something we'd throw at the city attorney.
Yeah. I think, disagree with it. I think that comes under personal care, and I know that there is, and probably of anyone up here, Ms. Peters, you and I are the most sensitive about this. But I don't see, and I know we're in the service of the public, but I don't think I can see spending taxpayer money to take care of.
Well, and I'll add some other things, too. When I do travel, I don't usually stay at the Sheraton at $300 a night. Yeah. I stay at a lesser hotel at $150 a night.
And
so I'm saving money there. I eat at A&W and stuff like that. I mean, I'll have one meal with the group or whatever. So I certainly do economize in other ways, and other cities also provide things like cell phones and laptops and things that we don't have. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not asking for them.
Right.
But it is a financial burden that is added on top of the service.
But I think we have to make the decision not in terms of you, but in terms of the position.
And that's why I was broadening it to say, you know, any of those.
Well, and for any mayor.
Yeah.
So, and I commend you for saving the city money when you do that. And I'm glad that you do that, particularly in our state today. And I wish that we all would do that, but whatever. So, but in the bigger picture, you know, would I want that to be true in 5 years or 2 years or 10 years, that I'm using money to pay for those personal expenses?
Even if you put a cap on it?
Even if you put a cap. Now, if we want to go to a different, and I don't know that this is legal, go to a different thing and say, okay, you're going to go to the League of Cities, you know, here's your allowance of $500, spend it any way you want, as long as they all come back with receipts. Now, if that's how you want to, you know, do the money, and so you pay for this instead of staying with the Sisters and at the Sheraton, then that might be another way to address it. Mm-hmm. But something where it keeps it a little bit more
If
equitable.
I may add a comment on that, I don't know what's totally legal as far as extra expenses and what's not, but I would think if you are a city government and you're not made up of people who are strictly retired but have lives and employment, there are things that, if you know, I could see where if the expenses were too high and what's reimbursed and what's not, basically then you would just simply say, I can't go. And somebody else might, or somebody else might not. And, you know, there's a certain responsibility for especially the mayor to be at some of these things. And, yes, you're not supposed to get rich off of it or make a profit on the poor taxpayer, but there is a point where you need to be there, and we need to make sure you get there. So I do think that there might be other expenses, and maybe they're tailored to the individual elected official, but there must be some vehicle where somebody could determine that's a necessary expense for this trip. And, you know, it's like in my case, there was a certain amount of elder care, and I solved that problem by not going. And so, but I wasn't the mayor. And so, you know, that's something I think we all need to keep in mind. There are going to be cases where, you know, okay, great, you don't want to cheat the public, but we also have to make sure we get that harbor dredged or something like that. And you can only do that by being there and lobbying.
Well, and interestingly enough, we haven't been able to afford even to send the mayor to many things. We are doing a little bit more of that, so I've actually been able to attend more places this year, but it's also made it more.
Funds in the amount of X amount of dollars can be used for family or pet-related per year, care per year.
Okay.
Either one of those are legal, but they do. I mean, we've talked about this. They do, where is that line drawn on between pet-related, family-related, all other scenarios that come to mind.
But here, in, if I may, item B7 specifically says, you know, not eligible would be personal losses incurred while on city business. Is that like you had your wallet stolen, or is that like extraneous costs?
I think it's stuff you get stolen.
That was a question.
I would interpret it as having your wallet stolen.
Well, what's the council's feeling? I don't want to be the one to make this decision, because I would be the one to benefit from it. So I would like you to discuss it and determine. Well, at this point, yeah. Some of you in the future may benefit from it. So.
I would simply make the motion that we would approve the policy for reimbursement for travel and expenses for elected and appointed officials as written by the city attorney.
I'll second that. And then individual basis come back with something.
Actually, don't we have to direct staff to come back with a resolution rather than just approving? Well, approving the policy, but direct staff to come back with a resolution is actually the motion, I do believe.
Okay, then I'll amend my motion to that I direct staff to come back with a resolution that would bring our policy into alignment with AB 1234.
I'll second it.
Okay, now, were you saying that then...
And then I was just on the side suggesting, on an individual basis, bring something
when these come up, say, okay, this is going to be so many days gone, can I have this allowance? Okay.
Is that something that doesn't have to be in the resolution that we can just simply...
Still under, like I said, that's still under that on page 2 that allows for all other expenditures require prior approval. So as long as it's looked at, and I think you made a good point, is the mayor says, you know, yes, I really want to go on this trip, but unless I'm going to get reimbursed for... this trip-related expense, you know, I'm going to have to bow out, and that's when the council can decide whether that's a necessary expense to send someone.
And I don't suppose it's going to be retroactive, is it?
Or you can watch the dogs.
Yeah, really. Isn't that something the vice mayor does?
Okay, we have a motion. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. And the last one, and this is the fun one. Oh, we're going to do it for 11. D6, consideration of a fundraiser to collect funds for events. This is what I had brought up before as a way to, we have increasing activities that the chamber is dreaming up, and they're being very successful, but they are having more and more of an effect on our city staff and services, and not always the funding to reimburse us for that. So other cities have had great success with doing these sort of fundraiser follies where everybody participates in some way or another and has a lot of fun, and we raise a lot of money. So what I was proposing is that what I'm asking here is I'm going to go ahead with that idea, but it would require the use of this building for the event and whatever electronics we can have out of here and that sort of thing without cost. So I would hope that you'd all think that it's a great idea and be part of the party, but what I'm looking for is approval to use the Vets Hall without a charge.
My question is, who's asking for approval? Is this the chamber itself is asking?
No, this is something I brought up.
So is it you personally, or are you doing it as the city, or...
Well,
I'm not
I guess
clear.
I'm doing it as an individual who would put together a committee to form this event. And then we would put it on, and all the profits from that event would go into a special fund that would be used to offset other chamber events' costs.
Question?
Yes.
Such as
the Harbor Festival, the car show, where they need police support, 4th of July, the Lighted Boat Parade, anything that needs support services or time from the city. Some of these, I forget what town it was that I read about where they did this just once because they wanted to raise, I don't know, $5,000 or whatever. And it was such a hit that they had to put on extra shows that same year, and it became something that people looked forward to every year and became a wonderful way to raise money for their events. So that's what I'm hoping will happen. I look at what goes on with the Women's Shelter event that happens every year, and they raise, I mean, I'm not comparing us to them, but they raise over $100,000.
Question. If you do this as a city council barricades out or something, that's a city cost. We can cover that cost out of this fund. It wouldn't be just giving them money, but it's to pay for city costs for city events.
And so then you're not doing it as a private person. You're doing it, you want the council to sponsor this.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
I didn't get that.
Yes, I'm sorry.
You want this to be a council-sponsored activity.
And if it is a council-sponsored event, there's no fees.
Okay. So I worded it wrong.
I excuse me, I'm sorry, but I have to jump in here a little bit because I just listened to you outline all the hours that you work, and I know that I work similar hours. And
I need more to do.
I don't know why. And we all went down and helped the chamber with the Avocado Margarita Festival. I did my bit down there. I don't see this as our job. I see this as the Rotary's job or the Chamber's job, somebody like that.
Well,
they've got the energy. They want to do something like this. Why don't we let them do it?
Because it's another event to them that they would have to get more volunteers for and everything. And, again, what I'm looking at is that all the money from this would go into a city fund to compensate city employees and city services for events that we want to support and can't right now. It's becoming a constant problem, you know, when they come in for 4th of July and say it's going to cost us all this and we don't have the money and can you waive this and can you cut down that. I'm looking for us to have this little war chest, as Bill said, to say, okay, we can give you this much out of here. And if it becomes something successful where, you know, we pull in $10,000 a year or something, it would alleviate a lot of those concerns.
How much?
$10,000. Hey, I have big ideas for this. I think it could be very successful.
Well, I know you have big ideas, but we haven't seen them, and I want it to be city-sponsored, not Janice Peters-sponsored.
Well, I agree. And I wouldn't do it alone, believe me.
And I actually don't even want it to be city-sponsored because I think we're all overworked here. I think our staff is overworked. Now suddenly we've got our staff answering questions about this event and creating the publications for
My feeling is to create a committee that would put together the event.
And who's on the committee?
I haven't done it yet. I haven't got approval yet. I'm asking you for approval.
I think it shows a lot of cooperation and commitment from us, and that's what we've talked about in the last couple of years is how can we assist them in helping us.
And so, have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be fun.
Yeah. What's to lose?
Okay, so what do I need to have a motion?
As long?
I move that the council support this as a city event. How's that?
Is that a motion?
Yeah.
Second.
Discussion.
Okay, I'm just going to roll it out here. We have primaries in June, and I don't think anyone's really declared any candidacies or anything. But I think we have to be very careful about... There's at least three of us up for a re-election.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'd have to be very careful about using city funds and city workers to do something that could be perceived to be as supporting any one of us, whoever's got the mic the most or whoever's on the picture of the flyer, you know, or whoever's the MC.
Okay, maybe I need to be a little more specific about what I'm envisioning here. What I'm envisioning is inviting the school kids to, you know, come up with ideas or acts or whatever. I'm envisioning, you know, local stores or the chamber or Rotary to get together a group and do an act. I'm looking at for it to be... I don't know if any of you remember the... what was it that we used to have? That we'd have different acts and things. And it was very similar to this. It's a fun thing. It's something that would involve the whole community. I'm thinking of cakes and things that local people bake and sell at the intermission. That's the kind of thing I'm looking for. I mean, if it's going to be performances, I would hope, you know, if Rick's an MC and...
Madam Mayor, is it something similar to the spaghetti feed?
Well, yeah, but a performance.
But a performance instead of a meal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this something that could come under that foundation then, rather than from the council?
If it is something that could be separate for this purpose. I mean, my whole goal in this was to have this purpose, to be able to fund these events that we're having a hard time covering.
Rather than vote on it tonight, could I encourage some homework about that and see if there's another entity that could take on this activity? Like check with the foundation and see if this is something that they could or would do come under their charter.
Rob, do you know that, if they could do that?
Well, I ask a similar but different question of them about a different topic, and they're really focused on their mission, which is funding certain specific programs for children.
Just for children.
And so what in my case, what they told me is this because this is outside the scope.
I'd like to have a chance to talk myself with people like Peter Candela or, you know, members of the Rotary. And
I've talked to Peter. Okay. He knows I'm doing this. But, okay, again, it's not something the chamber can take on. They are overloaded.
Well, I'm not...
Well, the difference is insurance, if nothing else. If we sponsor it, it's the city's insurance. If the chamber does it, they have to go out and buy insurance. Same way with Rotary.
Or they use ours.
Well, I don't know. Did we ever resolve that? Because
they use Rotary's.
Okay. But I'm just saying there's a lot of advantages to any fundraising effort if it's a, quote, something sanctioned by the city.
Well, then I think it becomes a policy thing for me is, you know, who are we raising this for? And you're saying we're for certain city-sponsored events, I assume. And then it's like, then should we be raising it for something else? Or, you know, at what point is it only for nonprofits? You know, that whole question of how far does it go and to whom does it go?
This all came out of the idea. I've sat in so many of those meetings where Andrea's there and John's there and Mike's there, and we're all, they're saying, you know, this is all we can afford to put on the Harbor Festival, and if you don't help us to this extent, we can't do it. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is the city ends up going in the hole, basically, for overtime and things like that. What I'm trying to do is make the hole a little more shallow. If we can fill it up with this fundraising once a year, if it's successful, maybe it won't be, but if it is, then it would give us an offset for that so that they aren't having to pick up all of that and we aren't either.
An example,
that was the goal.
An example of that would be the fire engine with the tall ladder at 4th of July.
Mm-hmm, exactly, and, exactly.
We already helped them out with that.
So are we supplementing city funds because they can't pay their fees to us?
No. We're supplementing city events ourselves. We're giving the city the hopefully help in supporting those events. That's the purpose.
I think the difference, if I may, is the fact that before a couple of budgets ago, all of these things that the mayor's talking about, we just did, yeah, and the departments absorbed it. You had police officers everywhere for 4th of July. You had, you know, the ladder truck was there, and nobody said, but wait a minute, this is going to cost $37.50. We can't do it. And so the last few years, with budgets being as tight as they are, all of this stuff has had to be negotiated or arm wrestled for or something. And I think the mayor is trying to look for a way of building a war chest so we can kind of get back to some of those services that were supplied on the community events. And it's only a handful of them. I figure you've got Light a Boat Parade, 4th of July, you've got
Harbor Festival.
And maybe the car show, yeah, and a couple of other things. And it's really, I don't know if it's a practical thing. I'm in support of trying it, but it just, you know, it may not fly, but it might work. The community might get behind it.
Well, yeah, that was one of the reasons the Harbor Fest had such a rough time balancing,
yeah,
their budget.
Exactly.
And we forgave them on mm-hmm. some of those things, whereas now we'd be able to...
This once again shows the policy about bringing items forward and not knowing exactly where it's going. And as I understand it, you've kind of gotten off the issue was, your issue was is there support for a fee waiver? And if there is, then it would come back with staff's request for a fee
but
waiver.
But it's kind of morphed into support for the idea of the event.
Right. But I think if anybody else came in here that was chamber, like you said, any other entity, nonprofit, then this would be a nonprofit venture because all the funds would go back to the city. They could come in also and ask for a waiver of this fee for the room and the lighting. Mm-hmm. And so is there support to bring back a fee waiver is the issue for this event. And whether you need more information or what information you need to waive that fee is the next question.
Okay. So if it's specific to the event and you want to know if we want to do a waiver as a fundraiser because it's for a nonprofit purpose, I could do that.
Okay, and then I'll put together a committee and come back and present something more to see if the city wants to support the idea as an event. How's that? Okay, so right now we just need a motion on the waiver of the fee for the Vets Hall.
But it's for a specific activity on a specific day?
Well, I had
and
to
it's
reserve
one
it.
Fee?
Yeah, I had to reserve a day.
I mean, one time?
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's 2 days, one for rehearsal, one for performance.
So moved.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. Betty, you voted in favor?
Yeah.
Okay, 4-1. Thank you. And I will put together a committee and bring it back. And no, I am not going to do it all myself because I can't. Okay, Melody, you have the quote tonight.
The closing quote.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Future agenda items.
Oh, sorry.
Anybody, you don't want water presentation? That DVD thing?
Two.
But we don't have a state lobbyist.
All right.
Well, they really are two separate issues. You wouldn't have the same lobbyist up in Sacramento that you would for the Coastal Commission.
Oh, you wouldn't.
There's really one that specializes, or there's a group of them that just specialize with the Coastal Commission, because remember, they're not located in Sacramento.
Is there not some sort of company or organization that this member goes there and this member goes there and we can buy into the service?
Okay. Well, do I have support for looking into that idea?
Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing that I would like to future agendize is the noise ordinance. I would like us to review it in regard to kennels and gardening machinery.
I second that.
Is that includes blowers, you mean?
Yes.
Is that a problem?
Apparently, yes.
some tourists complained about it at our hotel, but I thought we had gone over that.
No, apparently that's not in the ordinance.
No, we talked about construction hours, and then by way of,
right.
We kind of threw this
But
in.
Not these kind of noises, and they are becoming issues. Okay, so we have approval of 3 people on that one. So that would require a staff report, I guess. But there's not a big rush on it whenever it is convenient. Okay, now Melody.
The final quote. It's a quote from Jane Wagner, who is the writer and producer of Lily Tomlin's shows. I think it's a good one for tonight. It says, "Reality is the leading cause of stress amongst those who are in touch with it."
Amen. And we are adjourned.
That looks me up.